Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday, Tuesday, casual Tuesday, Wednesday, casual hump day, Thursday, casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, January 14th, 2022. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Heather Parton, or Digby, from the Uber blog Hullabaloo will be joining us on this casual Friday. Also on the program today, Francesca Fiorentini will be on. Fiorentini.
You did it.
Will be joining us.
Commit to one.
We'll be here later in the program. Just get an announcement about the live show around these parts.
Oh, wow.
You're not aware of that?
No.
Oh. Look at that. I'm completely
wow,
on top of these
things.
Wow,
you're so much cooler than me.
Well, you said it, not me. Supreme Court blocks OSHA's test or vax mandate. Starting to walk down that path towards making it virtually impossible for our government to protect workers, to protect consumers, to protect citizens. Meanwhile, Biden ups the purchases of tests to $1 billion. They're going to give them out free to Americans. Meanwhile, insurers slow walk the reimbursements. They're not going to be able to figure it out for weeks.
That's convenient for the insurers.
Yes. Right after Omicron starts to die down, Kristen Sinema rejects a filibuster carve-out. Chuck Schumer, however, has a new plan to ultimately not pass the voting rights legislation. 11 Oath Keepers are charged with sedition. Twitter, Facebook subpoenaed by the January 6th committee. Republican lawmakers could be next. And the RNC pulls out of nonpartisan debates because Navient cancels 66,000 loans in a deal with 39 states. Australia revokes Djokovic's visa on health and good. Health and safety for the public, I guess. Russian U.S.-Ukraine talks on the brink of collapse. Democrats quash a Republican attempt at Russian sanctions. And Prince Andrew is canceled. All this and more on today's program. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us. It's Casual Friday, as you can see, by the total absence of a collar that I am wearing today.
No collar
realizing
for me
not
either.
Wearing a collar also no. Is Emma Vigeland. Hello, Emma.
Hello. How are you? I mean, there must be something in the water today because you got both tough pronunciations right. You got Djokovic and you got Fiorentini.
That's right. I got both.
I mean, wow. Are you on drugs or something?
I am.
Performance enhancers.
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
Exactly.
We need to test you for some PEDs.
Testosterone.
You're on the Jordan Peterson diet. You're doing it in January like Joe Rogan.
That's correct. Yeah. My whole January is just going to be I'm only eating meat and fruit. That's it. Just meat and fruit. Just what I would have found if I was out in the, the wilderness.
Right.
Meat and fruit.
Returning to foraging.
Exactly. Foraging and catching squirrels. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome. We've got a lot of things to talk about. We're going to get in, obviously, to this the Supreme Court ruling. The two rulings, I imagine most people have heard about them. You'll recall the Biden administration issued a mandate via OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration Agency, and that mandate was everyone must test on a weekly basis amongst your workforce unless they are vaccinated. So there was a vaccine exemption for your workforce if you had 100 more employees.
So covering it as a vaccine mandate is inaccurate because it wasn't. You could test once a week and they just have to have a mask if they're unvaccinated.
Exactly.
And this
exactly.
would affect 84 million people. So it's substantial.
Substantial. And it may not be obvious. Apparently, it's not obvious to the Supreme Court why this why the occupational safety, the agency tasked with protecting people at work, why that might be important. Despite the fact that the Supreme Court, those people there are either vaccinated or testing before they walk into that room. Despite the fact that there were people not in the room who were in there via Zoom because they were COVID positive, which suggests that they had a test. Despite the fact that the Supreme Court was also remote for much of the past 2 years. Somehow they didn't understand this concept that there is something unique about work. In a workplace, relative to just walking around outside. Well, and that is where people congregate.
That's what's nuts about it, too, is that they made a distinction between the grave danger of a workplace and new hazards. But they basically said that if the hazard also exists outside of the workplace, then then it doesn't necessarily count. So, like, the outside hazard negates the hazard also being inside, but for some reason the hazard is very clear and present to healthcare workers, which they upheld. So even by their own logic, by the second ruling, it doesn't make any sense.
Well, I mean, it is more obvious that it is a heightened risk for healthcare workers because you have more people presumably coming in with COVID, theoretically, I guess. But it is the act of congregating which heightens the risk. And you could argue, like the Supreme Court did, that you have this risk associated if you go to, let's say, a basketball game. The difference is you don't need to go to a basketball game to eat. You are not compelled. You have the option to assume that higher level of risk. The whole point of OSHA is to protect workers. And if workers could willy-nilly decide that they don't want to go in and still retain the ability to eat, because remember, we've already determined as a society, and I know my right-wing friends would agree with this, that asking for vaccine mandates when you go into the movie is coercive. So if your desire to see a movie can be coerced, then certainly your need to eat, it's also coercive to say that you've got to come in. Like, your job is coercive.
Art fills you more than food, Sam.
Many respects, but, you know, I assume people go to see just, you know, big popcorn movies, too.
Spider-Man.
That aren't necessarily artistic.
Right.
So the Supreme Court has created a false dichotomy. Look, I got into this with Ben Shapiro, and we should pull those tweets later in the program. I got into this with Ben Shapiro on Twitter last night, too. He was talking about, like, the Supreme Court no longer is going to force us to fire our I can't even remember what he said. But he thought it was a really weird thing to require.
Fire his employees, he was basically right. saying, which, of course, he would. That's a complete
But he also said
mischaracterization
for
of the reality.
Right. And for other things, too. But the bottom line is that he thought it was weird that OSHA would do this. And I said, do you think it's weird when OSHA says that employees have to wash their hands after they go to the bathroom in restaurants? Now, the fact of the matter is, it is a danger to people outside of restaurants if you've got a lot of people going around and not washing their hands after they go to the bathroom. But OSHA says if you're coming into work and you're working here, you've got to wash your hands. It is a danger that exists outside. Food poisoning is a danger that exists outside of a restaurant. Passing germs exists outside of a restaurant. If you're working on scaffolding in the city,
yeah,
there are protections for you as a worker.
Do slips, trips, and falls only happen in the workplace?
Exactly. Well, of course.
Exactly.
And so this is just a made-up distinction. There's nothing in the statute that suggests that it's there.
And there's nothing in the OSHA rules either. I mean, right, exactly.
There's nothing in the statute that authorizes even the existence of OSHA. There's no place in our Federal Registry of Laws where it says this stuff only applies to hazards that are unique to the workplace. And I would argue that these hazards are unique to the workplace. And how do we know this? Because we have millions upon millions upon millions of Americans who are not going to work. They are working from home. Why are they doing this? Why would they do this? They are avoiding contact with other people to the extent that they can. But if you are employed by these companies, your ability, broadly speaking, I'm sure there are some individuals who could bubble themselves off, maybe the CEO or whatnot. And presumably, you can't get tested if you're not coming into any type of a workplace. This is a mandate for testing again. It really is incredible. And understand what's going on here. This is the Supreme Court's march, and we have talked about this over and over and over again. We've talked about this for 5 or 6 years. There is something called the non-delegation principle that right-wing jurists believe that Congress does not have the ability to entrust an agency to carry out broad mandates like we need clean air. And you scientists at the EPA will assess like what constitutes clean air, because you're scientists and you know that this chemical that I can't even pronounce, never mind even know what it is, benzoplazabazine, whatever you want to call it, is actually not healthy in this amount of dose. But I'm a congressperson and I don't know that. So I will delegate that authority to you. The right-wing conservative justices who sit on the Supreme Court now do not believe, well, have decided that Congress does not have that authority to delegate that authority, and they are going to bit by bit chip away at an ability for the EPA, the FDA, OSHA, SEC, FTC. I mean, it's going to, every agency is going to have their ability to protect people diminished step by step by step. This is their plan. The Chevron doctrine is another one, where the idea that the courts would defer to experts to make certain assessments. Slightly different concept than Congress being able to say, like, we're going to let you guys, we're going to give you a broad mandate, protect workers, let you how to figure it out best.
And it works in the reverse, too. I mean, a lot of the way that the conservative Supreme Court is throwing their hands up about protecting people is saying, well, this is Congress's job to legislate as well, fully understanding, abortion's a good example, fully understanding that Congress will never be able to do such a thing.
Of course. And frankly, like, you know, how specific does Congress need to be? What if there needs to be a change in the vaccination because there's a change in the variant of COVID? Does Congress need to say, we authorized a vaccine for, would the Supreme Court say they authorized a vaccine for Omicron, but not for Delta? Or they authorized a vaccine for Delta, but not for Omicron. I mean, this is where they're going. And you could just see that they're just willing to make up these doctrines of, like, doesn't exist inside. So, I mean, it exists. The threat exists outside. So it's not a workplace hazard.
Yeah, that's the third category here, too, is that this is a part of a deliberate attempt to undermine worker protections that we're going to be seeing as a theme of this Supreme Court.
Absolutely. So we will talk more about that with Heather Parton Digby in a moment. But, and people who've been listening to this show for months or years are, you know, have seen this coming. We've had multiple guests on to talk about this over the years. I've talked about it after learning about it from our multiple guests. And this is, you know, this is the part of the Supreme Court that, you know, like, pass anything you want, folks. Pass anything you want. But if the Supreme Court decides that it's not constitutional, it's not constitutional for as long as that Supreme Court reigns. That's the nature of our system. Not enough to say, let's abolish the Supreme Court. We can't even abolish the freaking filibuster. And that's not mentioned in the Constitution. First, a word from our sponsor. My favorite sponsor, Sunset Lake, Sabadai.com.
Oh, man. I took this new bottle that I haven't seen before that I'm going to bring home with me.
Which flavor is that?
3,000 milligrams CBD.
What's the flavor?
Sabadai. It's natural flavor.
Yes. Well, that's the big news that Sunset Lake has. Not only do they have a 6,000 milligram of full spectrum tincture, but they also now have in their 750 milligram, the 1500 milligram, 3000 milligram, and 6000 milligram tinctures are now available in two new flavors. Yes, that's why all those bottles are there. You got to check it out. Both citrus and mint. Now, I gotta say, like, for me personally, I like what do they call it? The natural flavor.
Yeah,
I have really liked the natural flavor. Because it reminds me of the days where I would enjoy hemp products in a smokable version. And I like that taste, frankly. And I was, gotta say, I was like a little bit skeptical. But as you know, I use this tincture to go to sleep. And the mint, it sort of like jibes with my toothpaste.
Well, you like mint, right?
That's I like mint.
The scents and tastes you can tolerate.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so I am now a big fan of the mint tincture. I tried the citrus. To me, that's more, I like it, but it's more of like a daytime thing. But your mileage will vary, but I'm a mint guy. And so now I've got two options. I don't know, maybe mint will be during the week. And the natural will be during the weekend for my tincture. And here's the deal. Right now, all Sabadai tinctures will be 30% off at Sunset Lake CBD. Sabadai.
Oh, jeez.
SunsetLakeSabadai.com. Orders over $100 will receive a free 750 milligram tincture that is a $30 value for free. So check it out, folks. If you like the natural flavored, still there. But you do have the ability to get that 6,000 milligram full spectrum now. But it is made with purified Sabadai distillate. The 6,000 tincture is the most powerful product Sunset Lake Sabadai has ever produced. A single dropper holds 100 milligram of Sabadai. So, sleeping time. I already feel like I should take a nap right now. So starting Tuesday, January 18th, this is Tuesday, January 18th, all Sabadai tinctures will be 30% off. Orders over 100 will receive a 750 milligram tincture. That is a $30 value. You don't need a promo code for that. They'll be automatically taken off. That is, remember, on January 18th. So it's 3 or 4 days from now. And the sale ends January 25th. Check it out. Also, they've got a bunch of other great products there. You know that.
They sent us some dog biscuits. They sent us some dog biscuits, so my dogs might get a little treat tonight.
Yep, there you go. Bradley's dog is going to be partying tonight.
Plural.
And
dogs.
You know what? And now, like, you know, in the wake of that, the reports that are out about CBD, I was able to look at, like, you know, they give you a breakdown of everything that is in every product. The sheets of paper right over there, and you can look at it. It's all been tested by third party. The integrity this company have is really in their product is really amazing, and also, frankly, across the board. Check it out, sunsetlakecbd.com. Okay, want to welcome Digby. Are you ready for some party? Oh, nice. Let's bring her in. Are you ready for some Digby? Yeah. Heather, can you hear it?
I can.
There we go, ladies and gentlemen. Heather Parton, or Digby, from the blog Hullabaloo. Of course, people can also read your stuff at salon.com. Here with Emma. Happy New Year, Heather.
Happy New Year to you, too. I hope you guys are doing well. Your show's been excellent since you got back.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Very nice to say.
Hope you're well, too. I have better manners than Sam, so.
Yes, I hope you're well, too.
It goes unspoken, yes.
So, a lot of stuff went on yesterday. Usually we look back on the week, but it feels like it was all sort of like backloaded this week into Thursday. I was just talking about the Supreme Court and the vaccine mandates. I mean, aside from just the sheer insanity of it, it is also, you know, and I guess, like, they did not explicitly attack the legitimacy of an agency being delegated this authority from Congress, but they are taking a step. Right. They are taking a step in that Congress would have had to have said in the affirmative, despite the absence of any type of, you know, limiting. Look, Congress gave OSHA authority and they made a determination. We're going to either limit it or not limit it to threats that could exist outside of the workplace. I mean, this is so insane that just your thoughts.
Well, yeah, I actually read about this for Salon this morning. It just went up a few minutes ago. You know, obviously, you're absolutely right. It's insane. It makes no sense whatsoever that, you know, they said, well, this isn't really a workplace issue because you can get COVID someplace else. I mean, the fact that you're in a room for 8 hours a day with a bunch of other people breathing all over the place, you know, I guess that doesn't count as being a specific workplace danger. I mean, they think that asbestos is a they have rules that say that employers are not allowed to expose their employees to asbestos, but apparently COVID, you know, is something else. And it wasn't like this was a draconian law mandate. It was get vaccinated or get tested. I mean, how hard is that? Millions of people are getting tested every day. I mean, this is completely normal. Look, you mentioned earlier what was really going on here. I mean, yes, they are pandering to their, you know, hard right constituency, which is obviously anti-vax and, you know, anti any kind of government mitigation of this pandemic. It's pretty obvious to me they want to prolong it because and just pretend it's not happening, but yet have people dying all over the place so they can blame Joe Biden for failing to stop the pandemic. I mean, this is just part of their circular, you know, strategic logic. But the long-term project here is obvious. And for those of us who follow this stuff, and I can't blame anybody for not bothering, it's exactly what you say. They have been for years trying to, disassemble what they call the administrative state. And this isn't a secret. They talk about it. They have seminars and confabs and all kinds of things in which they discuss this in great detail.
What's Steve Bannon, we should just say, announced it at CPAC the year that that Trump won.
I was just going to mention him, which proves that this extremist viewpoint is not just in our, you know, in these sort of discrete legal circles. This is something that permeates the entire GOP. And by the way, somebody like Liz Cheney, somebody like Mitt Romney, you know, this is one they are all on board with. I mean, this is one that there's nobody out there in the Republican Party who is objecting to this particular strategy, long-term goal that they have had for a long time. And so I think what they're doing with this one, you know, they did manage to eke out a couple of conservative votes on the court to uphold the healthcare mandate, which is stunningly wouldn't anyone assume that would be unanimous because healthcare, right? I mean, it's insane that four of those conservatives voted against the healthcare mandate, even in states like South Dakota and Arkansas and others that are putting in place all these bans on mask mandates and things like that. Even they put exemptions for healthcare workers in there. But four of those guys on that court voted, you know, yesterday or whenever they voted for it, but announced that they were against the healthcare mandate. So this is that these extreme views, which are, you know, highly, highly just rank partisanship, really, because this is designed to that particular sort of thing is just designed for electoral purposes. But the long-term ideological goal here is to, as Steve Bannon puts it, deconstruct the administrative state. And just a couple of months ago, not even a month ago, he was on his podcast announcing that he was putting together 4,000 shock troops, as he called them, that when Donald Trump is restored to the presidency, they will be prepared on day one to go into every agency and begin the full, you know, spectrum wrecking ball strategy that they have on these agencies. This is a real thing. And when we see what they did yesterday, yes, they're doing it incrementally because they're setting up a series of precedents that they can use to completely obliterate the, you know, hundreds of previous precedents that said OSHA and other agencies had the right to create these mandates. They're setting up a system, which will happen over the course of, you know, several years, I assume, where they're incrementally going to be creating these precedents where they can rely on that to obliterate a good part of what we see as the regulatory state as a positive good that makes America a first world country. We have water that is clean. We have, you know, we're able to work in a place where, you know, people aren't making everybody sick. And there, you know, that there is some guidance out there. I mean, I don't think people realize how much that administrative state, as they call it, is important to just our day-to-day lives. This isn't some abstract political thing, and it's not some kind of weird part of our government that nobody can understand. This is real, tangible, practical stuff that we deal with every day, and that makes our lives livable. I mean, it's what makes us function, really, as a modern country, and they want to get rid of this and have wanted to for a very long time. So I found yesterday's, that's why I wrote about it today. It was, as you say, there was a lot going on yesterday and many, many interesting and shocking and horrifying things to write about. But that to me was the one that just really struck, sent a chill down my spine because I realized really it's happening and I don't see any road out of this short of some, you know, radical change in the Democratic Party that I don't see happening.
I mean, I'm not even sure that at this juncture, radical change in the Democratic Party would really implicate it. I mean, I suppose there's ways, but yeah, I'm with you. Of all the news stories, and there was a bunch, this one, both because of what it's going to do for the pandemic, or possibly could. I mean, who knows where we'll be in 3 months with this pandemic? But what it will do for future pandemics is an issue. And I look at my kids, you know, my 8-year-old, and I realize that by the time he is, you know, in his 20s, there is going to be so far fewer protections for people where they work, where they eat. I mean, this is a point I think that people should really, really understand. All those resistance, it doesn't matter who you want to pick. They're all for this because this, every rollback of a worker protection, of a protection of a citizen or a consumer or however, you know, like any of us, is an extra dollar or 50 cents or a quarter or 10 bucks in corporate coffers. That's ultimately what this is about. It is, you know, supposedly some type of ideology about, you know, no authority. This is about corporations making money and the training all of us to accept the idea that there is no way that we're just at the mercy of like whatever, you know, generates profit for people. That's it. And on some level, like, you know, this is all, like you say, it's all submerged. And on some level, there's like a sort of like a, I don't know, like a dog that catch the car type of quality. Although it's, you know, a dog that was, you know, sort of like slowly catching that car over the course of like, I don't know, 70, 100 years at this point. I mean, OSHA, the OSHA Act, I think, is like, what, 50 years old, maybe? And EPA is now 50 years old. And, you know, the FDA, I don't know, 80, 90 years old. I mean, the bottom line is that I don't think our society understands that these functions of government, they're ideological. They're, you know, like we take them for granted that like, oh, I'm going to go into a restaurant and that dude is bringing me the, you know, my chicken. They had to wash their hands when they left the bathroom. And that's an ideological choice that was made by Americans, you know, 50, 60 years ago.
Absolutely. I mean, this is what liberalism, you know, for lack of a better word, and our sort of American definition of liberalism has brought us. And even back, you know, I mean, the EPA was begun, I believe, under Nixon, right? I mean, these were things that there was a certain consensus that politically this was something that these people could not overtly oppose, right? I mean, the conservatives always opposed it, no doubt about it, and as did big business. And you're certainly right about the fact that this is really a corporate driven, this is where the money in politics has permeated this ideology with money and also I think with just sheer persuasion. I think a lot of these people now just believe this stuff, whether or not, you know, they're being paid for it or not. I mean, what does some activist, you know, in some town in you know, Alabama somewhere, why would they care about this? Why are they not getting vaccines? I mean, this stuff has permeated their belief system.
Right.
And it doesn't really have a direct relationship with the money, but it certainly does with politicians. These are the people they you know, hang around with. And this is, you know, look at Joe Manchin. He's a perfect example of this. And, you know, I'm sure he would vote to get rid of the EPA because that sort of hurts his very particular, you know, part of the you know, big money ecosystem in energy. So, you know, I mean, this is the kind of thing, it's been out there for a long time, but they were sort of forced by the fact that there was this kind of public consensus. They have chipped away at that. They've worked at it. And, you know, one of corollaries to this particular goal that they have with the administrative state is also in lawsuits, right? I mean, they used to have, I remember George Bush having rallies where he would just say the words tort reform and everybody cheer like, man, I'm going, do these people have any idea what tort reform? It was like lock her up for George W. Bush was tort reform. And it always kind of made me chuckle, but still, you know, this was just something that they were pushing, and they relentlessly pushed it year after year after year, which of course, tort reform, what they're talking about is inhibiting the right of people to sue you know, major companies for failing to have their workers yep. wash hands or failing to do some of these things that they're required to do under the law and, you know, making it dangerous for us to live in this country. So that goes along with this. And I'm sure that we're going to see the Supreme Court, you know, pushing hard on that stuff as well. I mean, this is where, you know, I mean, I think I was with you maybe in a day or so after the 2016 election, you know, where we were all with our heads in our hands just going, you know, oh my God. And this was the primary reason. Politics, you know, we're in a period of this polarization where every election is kind of, it's all, you know, they're all incredibly important. But one thing we knew was that the court was on the line. We had old people that were, you know, on their last legs on the court. We had, you know, Republicans who were ready to retire the minute they got the chance with a Republican president. We knew that stuff was happening. We knew that the majority was going to change. And we knew that this was what was on the table. Yes, abortion rights, of course. Voting rights, all the usual stuff, the culture war things that, you know, are very much in play. But this is the hidden agenda. This is the real thing. And this is why everybody backed Donald Trump when you know, when push came to shove. This is why they did it, because this is what they were going to get out of it, was that court. Mitch McConnell knew that. They, you know, Donald Trump just was a, you know, an disembodied hand that signed the nomination papers. You know, I mean, it didn't matter who it was in there. They just needed a Republican to do that and to get that court and, to, you know, in the lower courts, too. I mean, they've got a bunch of cases that are coming up that these lower courts are going to get up to the court that are just, you know, they're scary in the scope of the radicalism that is coming up through our judiciary. And, you know, this is the thing that had me, you know, tossing and turning in the middle of the night, because we knew this is and this is going to hit people where they live. This is the stuff that hits people where they live. And, you know, the thing is, Sam, will that persuade people? If it hits them where they live, will they realize that something terrible has happened? Or are we just becoming numb to this stuff now?
Well, two things occur to me. To answer that, it is when you talk about a radical change in the Democratic Party, it has to be like a greater understanding. And maybe also, you know, in some instances, there's you know, I don't know, Nancy Pelosi getting up there and saying, like, we should be allowed to trade whatever stocks we want. I mean, that is, you know, an extension of the same type of a problem. But to have a Democratic Party that can articulate a broader vision of government and society that will remind people that it is an ideological question whether we will require, not whether you should, but whether... Not whether a waiter should wash their hands after they take a poop at a restaurant, but whether we as a society will require that. That is an ideological question. And there is a significant portion of this country, for whatever reason, that believes that we should not as a society require that waiter. Or maybe they don't understand that that is a requirement by the government. Or that's what we're talking about. But that needs to be articulated.
It's presented as a sign in the bathroom and a choice as opposed to a rule. Like, there's this muscle memory with a lot of voters in this country that rules/regulations equals bad outcomes for you. And that's some of it.
And I think to a certain extent, there's a failure to just simply understand that, like, we have had for so long the a media that says, like, look, we all agree on the problem. It's just, what is the solution? And that's just simply not true. That is just simply not true. We don't all agree on the problem. And we don't, agree that the safety of the people eating there is paramount versus the profits that the entity will make. We don't all agree on that at all. And so it both gets lost in the way, in the daily way that, that Emma's talking about, but also gets lost in this sort of, like, this is an ideological, debate as to whether our society should have the ability to get together and to implement these things. And, you know, the Supreme Court's going to fine slice it to make it just like a series of obstacles. They may do the same thing with Roe v. Wade.
And I should also say, put this in there, when we're talking about tort reform, McConnell tried to do this on a national scale in a different way with the liability shield during the COVID pandemic. And like then the Republicans adopted it on the state level. So it's a two-pronged approach, obviously, with the courts on one end and the state legislatures on the other.
And you don't even have to do it in terms of the statutes, specific statutes like that. Particularly back when I was doing Ring of Fire, we would talk about this, but when I'm still going to go to Vegas when we start this up again. The courts themselves will change the processes that will bar people from there. So they'll simply say, you know, forget the idea of like, you know, specific statutes. They will say you cannot band together anymore as a group of people to fight this. California, it was Concepcion, I think, was the case with AT&T, where AT&T was charging everybody in the state an extra $3 a month. And that's wrong. It is billions of dollars for them over time, but it's wrong. But no one individual is going to get up and go like, I'm going to take AT&T to court for the $36 a year that they've overcharged me. But if you all band together, all you need is just one lawyer again. You don't need a million lawyers. You just need one lawyer to go in, more or less. And the court said, no, we can't do that. We're not going to allow that anymore. And that diminishes the power of the people as an entity. And I will say this too about the agencies. And I'm sorry, you know, I'm dominating this conversation so much because we're talking so much because this is obviously a bee in my bonnet for a long time. We spoke to Sam Bagenstos, who back in 2016, who is now in the Justice Department for the third time. In the Biden administration. I can't remember exactly where. He ran for Supreme Court in Michigan, I believe, back in a couple years ago. But he was in the Clinton DOJ, and he was in the Obama DOJ. And he said those 8 years, when the Bush administration ran the DOJ, it obliterated the Department of Justice. And I've talked to people who are in the EPA, and the 4 years of Trump, I mean, people, to understand this, imagine if you had a company, a new president comes in and puts people in whose job it is to destroy the company. How long do you need those people to be in there until all the good people leave or all the processes are changed in such a way that there's no institutional memory of how it works it well? Or they get to stay on, because a lot of those people are still there, when the new CEO comes in and tries to change things. And that's what we're dealing with the agencies now. Under a 5-year, 10-year, 15, 20, 30-year period of time, when the Supreme Court would begin to dismantle these agencies and their ability to do stuff, people are just going to leave. People who care about the environment, they're going to leave the EPA. People who care about workers' rights, they're going to leave OSHA. They're going to leave the Labor Department. They're going to leave these places. And they're just going to be full of people who are just going to destroy the apparatus. And so this is the thing. This type of thing is going to have an impact over time in a way that they can overturn Roe v. Wade. We can imagine, and there's going to be a lot of suffering because of it, but we can imagine, you know, a time where someone gets into office and it's reversed. It doesn't work like that with this. With a government's functioning that has built up over the course of 70 or 100 years or 50 years to protect people, as inept as it is in some instances, the next 50 years are going to be really, real. I mean, and then you're going to need another 50 years to build it back up.
Oh, and it's not like we have any like major crises coming, like climate change or anything, where you might want experts and people who know what they're doing at the helm. So that's good. I mean, there's nothing happening that we need to be too concerned about that could make this an even more extreme crisis than what we're already facing. And look what they did. I mean, even places like the State Department. Do you remember? When who was the first guy? Did Rex Tillerson another rich guy that I always thought he looked like he should be on Money. That they, you know, they put
former
him in,
on CEO.
Exactly. They put him in there and people were just going, what the hell is happening here? And they left in droves. There was another agency under Trump. What was it where they changed it so that all the it was in Washington and they
yes.
moved it. I can't remember
it
which
was, one. It was the what the not the Interior Department, the what was it? Yeah, they forced everybody to live outside of Washington, D.C.
They changed that. Oh, well, there's no reason for you to be in D.C. And of course, these people are all professionals. They have, you know, they have
families and it was agriculture. Department of Agriculture. Oh, we lost you. Heather, we lost your audio for some reason. Are you there? Heather, we're going to take a quick break and see.
Here
we go. Okay, sorry.
I don't know what happened there. Sorry, it's probably me. Anyway, the fact that they moved these people out and made them, you know, what they were trying to do was just dismantle it, essentially, because they knew that most of these people would not move. Most of them did not move, and so that agency is no longer functional. I can't read. It was some kind of they were scientists, I believe. It was some
It was a part of the Agriculture Department. It wasn't Agriculture Department, but
That's the kind of thing that they're doing, and you know, we're going to see the results, as you say, over the next 50 years. I mean, this is going to be a degradation of everyday life in America. That's just the way it is. Yeah.
Let's move on to,
that was fun. That was uplifting.
I mean, we're going to have sadly more time to talk about this, but it is the most submerged, it is the most submerged of issues. And it is also in many ways, the most basic and material and crucial of issues. And it unfortunately has both those things. And so, you know, I mean, I watched Hayes' program for the first time in a long time last night, and this took up about 3 minutes at the end of the entire thing in of the show, and I was like, man, this is, and it's because people, it just bores people to death, and it'll put them right to sleep, but it is. And it is also going to be the hardest one, you know, like Emma says. You start getting more food poisoning at restaurants. Nobody's going to go back and say like, oh, the non-delegation principle and the Chevron doctrine. And like that's not what's going to happen.
It isn't working. They're failures. You know, I mean, it builds on itself, right?
Yeah. They're just going to maybe one person here or there will say, I may not go to that restaurant, but can't tell which restaurant I got it from. All right. But let's talk a little bit about, I don't know. I mean, you also wrote about the Republicans are getting a little bit nervous about the so-called big lie. But also, you know, the January 6th commission, these were big arrests yesterday.
Yes.
Give me your take on this, because, you know, we had heard reports in the past about the Oath Keepers, you know, sort of like being on the outskirts of town, D.C. with weapons caches. And, you know, like waiting for a signal, I don't know, like a smoke was supposed to come from the Capitol or a flag, you know, a Trump 2020 flag raised over the Capitol or something. But the amazing thing about that, which I haven't, you know, I imagine people have brought up, but I haven't heard anybody really talk about, is that that suggests that maybe at least they knew that this wasn't going to be a spontaneous attack on the Capitol.
Well, it sure does. I mean, it sure does. And, you know, there's like only a couple of degrees of separation from these guys from the White House. Roger Stone was with the Oath Keepers on the morning of January 6th. We all know Roger Stone is, you know, Donald Trump's big buddy. He's involved in the Willard Hotel stuff, you know, with Steve Bannon and Rudy Giuliani and all this stuff. So, I mean, it always seems so weird because when you're talking about Donald Trump and his machinations, it's such a clown show. That you think, you know, how bad could it have been? But here we're dealing with something I think that's pretty serious in a way that I don't know that we've thought about it before. This is a militia group, essentially. These guys are ex military and ex-cops. And there's actually, they say about 10% of the members are current military and cops. These are people who are trained, right? I mean, obviously they're trained in violent, you know, kinetic activity, as they call it. They, from November on, they were planning this, it appears. They have all these signal, you know, communications back and forth between these people. There is some connection but among them, it looks like, probably between the Proud Boys, the Oath Keepers, maybe the Three Percenters, which are the top three groups, these militia groups that were there, that, you know, they were planning for this. I mean, it's obvious that at least in the case of Stuart Rhodes, the head of the Oath Keepers, that they were talking about storming the Capitol on January 6th. They were talking about holding it. We knew that they had, you know, maps of underground, you know, tunnels in the Capitol, et cetera, and that they had these caches of weapons outside. I mean, what this suggests, and this is why they were charged with sedition, which is different than the other ones have been charged with up to now, because this really does suggest that they were planning to do the thing that actually happened, that they were planning to do this. And for whatever reason, their plan was aborted, which appears to be that they thought if they could hold the Capitol through the night, that they could send out this signal and these people who were arrayed around the area. What would happen is, they said, was that they would go in, they would storm the Capitol, then they would actually fall back as the rubes who were following their, you know, just spontaneously following their orders, which tells you something about them. And then they would fall back, and then they would get their weapons and come back and go into the Capitol later and hold the Capitol. Now, the whole thing sounds ridiculous, right? I mean, this is like, you know, nuts. But, you know, I mean, I'm not sure I couldn't have seen that happening, and that might have worked under certain circumstances that day. And, you know, it's not like we haven't seen these militia types do things in the past. I mean, you know, the Oklahoma City bombing was the same group, was done by a person who was part of the same, you know, basic, you know, tribal group that we're talking about here. He was ex-military. He was in a militia. He had read all the Turner Diaries and all that stuff. And he went and he blew up a federal building and killed, you know, hundreds of people. The worst terrorist attack before 9/11 was done by people like this. So I don't, and you know, I mean, this stuff's been around for a long time, but this is particularly, you know, it has been particularly activated in the age of Barack Obama, for obvious reasons, and then Donald Trump. So, you know, we're looking at something that I think is a very serious situation. I don't know if the Department of Justice will be able to prove this case in some way, but I think what they're trying to do, they've obviously got some people who are cooperating. I mean, that's how they got the information, the documents that they have. And I don't know whether or not this is going to turn out to, you know, take this to a higher level. But I think what astonishes me about it, and I mean, we know, you know, so much of what's happened, and maybe the January 6th committee has more, the Department of Justice seems to have more than we know. So this is evolving as a story. But the fact is that Donald Trump and his big lie on the other side of this, and has been aided and abetted by Fox News and the gazillion podcasts by people like Steve Bannon, have truly made this a debatable question as to whether or not this was a good thing to do, whether or not this was the right thing to do. I mean, Trump is, you know, I don't know if people probably don't read the statements that he sends out to every one of the people on his millions of email, you know, recipients on his donor list. But it's crazy. I mean, he sounds like a raving lunatic. And I'm saying that worse than he did before when he was in office, because his obsession with January 6th, actually his obsession with the November election, I should say, is so nuts. I mean, he's out there, you know, we just found three more votes in Pima County. You know, I mean, that kind of stuff he sends out to all these people.
Right.
And if you listen to that NPR interview that he did this week, you know, where he was actually confronted with the fact that he's just, you know, making shit up. He, uh, you know, that tells you where his mind is. And these people are all buying into this stuff. And look at what's happened to the Republican Party. They are now backing this to the point where anybody who objects to what happened on January 6th, I mean, this guy Mike Rounds tried it, said, well, you know, Joe Biden really did win the election. We need to move forward. A few sort of tiptoed behind him, John Thune and some others. But really, you know, it's a consensus within the Republican Party that they have to go along with this because otherwise, because their constituency has been completely brainwashed into believing that the election was stolen. And now the second half is that January 6th was a justified action. I mean, that's kind of scary. And, you know, so we'll see this where this case goes. But, you know, I don't know. Can that change? I don't even know if it's changeable.
And let me just add to that dynamic. I don't think it's just that the Republican Party outside of Donald Trump is forced to go along with this. I think that there is a significant portion of the Republican elected leadership who are opportunistic and see that this is a viable and valuable path. And that's what's so dangerous about this. You know, Donald Trump could be a lunatic and, you know, Roger Stone could be a lunatic. And these guys who had weapons out stored, you know, it's not like, you know, I remember the FBI setting up people like, you know, these quasi, you know, terrorists who they just needed boots and a uniform to take over, you know, four guys in who were going to plan over to take over the U.S. government if they had boots and four and, you know, and pants that they were trying to secure. They were trying to get uniforms. They had no weapons. They felt like they had the uniforms that they would do it. And these guys had weapons. They had full on weapon caches. You see how they're dressed. I mean, they're fully buffed up. They may or may not have been able to do. I mean, I suspect the way that it would have gone down would not be that they're, you know, they're in charge of everything after that happens. But the delay could have caused enough of a crisis that we need to reexamine the ballots. And instead of nine senators, whatever it was, we now have, you know, 40, you know, 51 senators to look at this, because this is a crisis. And this, you know, the American people have spoken and blah, blah, blah. I mean, it could have gone that way. But I think even more dangerous, and why it's even more incumbent to have these hearings and to arrest people and to follow, you know, pull these strings, is that somebody, I don't know if it's, you know, Madison Cawthorn or whatever that guy's name is, or, you know, or Matt Gaetz, or, you know, frankly, Ron Johnson, is sitting there going like, hey, wait a second. There's gold in these MR hills. And, this is, if I want to be a Republican politician, I do. And I want to be president, I do. This is the way I do it. And it's not that they're, you know, Donald Trump has forced them into something. For some of these people, it's that Donald Trump has shown them the promised land.
Of course.
And they're just not as idiotic as he is. He stumbled across it and they're like, wait a second, that's where I'm headed. And so this is all a blueprint.
Yeah, of course it is. And consider this. I mean, this voter fraud thing that Donald Trump didn't invent that. Republicans have been saying this for decades. The former Chief Justice of the United States, William Rehnquist, was part of a group back in the 1960s in Arizona called Operation Eagle Eye that was out there suppressing the vote of Latinos in Arizona. I mean, that came up at his confirmation hearings. Of course, he naturally was confirmed anyway because, well, that's how we do things. But, you know, this has been going on for a very long time. They seeded the ground of voter fraud as an issue for someone like Donald Trump to come in and just completely run with it. And now, and his people and the Republican Party, when they hear this, when Republicans hear what Donald Trump says, voter fraud, they stole the election, you know, it was fraud everywhere you look. They, you know, brought in late night votes. I was winning until 11 o'clock and then suddenly I wasn't. All this stupid stuff that he says that, you know, the normal people look at and go, well, that's crazy. You know, of course they're counting votes. What are you talking about? those people have been primed for decades from people like Rush Limbaugh, from Fox News, from Republican politicians, from the entire conservative movement to believe that voter fraud is a huge, huge problem in this country. And remember, they took that all the way to the Supreme Court when they, you know, did the voter ID case. And the Supreme Court, you know, they offered the Supreme Court evidence that there was no voter fraud, and there isn't, and there never has been. I mean, I'm not saying zero, but there's nothing systematic or anything that has ever changed an election, as far as we know. And the Supreme Court went, well, you know, yeah, that's true. But, you know, just to make to settle people's minds, we can allow these kinds of restrictions because people have doubts about the election system. Well, I mean, the sowing of these doubts about the election system is what's working for Republicans. Always has, by the way. But now they're seeing how Donald Trump put them in a position of taking what they had been working on for years and years and turning it into a real mass movement now that believes that our entire electoral system is rigged in favor of Democrats, which is, you know, I'm going, how come you guys have been in charge, you know, so much then? How does that happen? But, you know, this is the belief system that they've inculcated into their constituency, and they believe it now. And I think one of the things you have to think about, which is, you know, what happens if Democrats do win legitimately next time, say in 2022? Big surprise, all the prognosticators, they're gloom and doom. It's impossible for Democrats to win. They can't possibly win. It's a midterm, blah, blah, blah. Well, what if Democrats eke it out? Maybe, you know, the American public says, you know what, this is BS. We're going to go out. We're going to vote. And they vote the Democrats back in. They will not believe it. I mean, the other side will go lose their minds. In other words, they will not allow themselves to lose elections going forward. It just won't happen.
And you know, we just had a conversation the other day about this sort of this, you know, with Osita Nuevo, I guess it was last Friday. We've trained them also to believe that they should rule the country, even though they have consistently less votes. Like, you know, like, I mean, like, whether it's in the Senate or whether it's, you know, in the presidency, I mean, the idea that, like, they have such a hold on, and so that they don't, it doesn't even occur to them that they have less votes. They just assume if Donald Trump's president, more Americans voted for him. If George Bush president, more Americans voted for him. If the Republicans have, you know, 50 members in the Senate, it's because more Americans voted for him. I mean, and I think also people should keep in mind, you know, you hear people talk about the Overton window, or you hear people talk about, you know, this guy staking out this position gives this person, this woman, you know, more oxygen over here, or the next time. Just the act of the storming of the Capitol becomes the new benchmark as to what is theoretically wrong behavior. I mean, you still have a lot of people out there going like, well, it's just like, you know, they're just checking out the Capitol. They're just a bunch of old guys checking out the Capitol, not making a deal. Like, but even if someone doesn't buy that like, oh, yeah, there were people storming the Capitol and there were people waiting with the weapons to come in. On the outskirts, in the perimeter, if that does it, we don't reach that bar, then they can get away with anything up to that point, and it'd be just like, it's politics.
Well, at least they didn't storm the Capitol. I mean, exactly. You know, they didn't storm the Capitol, so we're good. The system worked.
Yeah. Yep.
We survived. So it's all good. I know. I mean, this is craziness, and I don't see it ending. I, you know, whatever people thought, you know, there's been a lot of discussion this week about the voting rights thing, which we haven't talked about. But, you know, the fact that it does seem to be dead in the water. And there's a lot of discussion. Should they have gone earlier with that and, you know, done that rather than go with the big economic packages, you know, and back and forth. But, you know, the truth is that I don't know that after January 6th, I think people thought, I mean, we were all stunned and shocked and just, oh my God, they impeached Trump again. You know, they didn't do it right, but they did impeach him. But I think there was some thought that, you know, okay, this has to be it, right? I mean, this is the thing that's going to cut it off. You had even Lindsey Graham saying, count me out, you know. And if they had tried to pass the voting rights thing at that point, it's entirely possible that people would have gone, you know, come on, let's try and we need to be the saucer that cools the tea, you know, and let's not really push this too hard. And I totally believe people said that and thought that somehow or another things were going to, we needed to cool off and we needed to cool down and everybody needed to regroup and that Donald Trump was going to fade because he was out of office and he wasn't on Twitter and, you know, let's everybody just relax here. So I'm not sure it would have worked better then because I think there was a lot of feeling that that was the impression I got from the leadership. But it's been the opposite. This thing is growing. It's not cooling off. It's getting worse. And, you know, the anti-vax movement, we're seeing that implicated here. We're seeing this. And, you know, I mean, the fact that somebody like Kyrsten Sinema or Joe Manchin can't see that and don't care, apparently.
They don't care.
They have their own reasons for doing what they're doing, which we've talked about, you know, for hours on end over the course of the last year or so. But, you know, this is getting worse. And, you know, the more we find out about this, the worse it was at the time, and it's getting worse than what it was at the time. And, you know, I have every reason to think that there's going to be some form of violence. I cannot see how that's not going to happen. I just don't see how that's not going to happen.
I mean, what you're describing is the only metric that we have to judge the leadership of the Democratic Party. And, you know, whether it was Joe Biden saying, give me 6 months, 6 months after Donald Trump's gone, man, don't worry, Jack. And Schumer and Pelosi slow walking things after the passage of the stimulus. Biden insisting on making this bipartisan and inviting Republicans to debate. And then when Republicans couldn't come up with something, we'll have Portman Cinema and we're going to do the whole process and this and that. There is, I will never believe that Joe Biden wanted to be less popular than Donald Trump at this stage in his presidency. There has been an abject failure on all of these counts. Was this inevitable because COVID came roaring back in a way that they didn't anticipate? Maybe when you put business people in charge of testing, they don't understand the importance of what can happen. And then that's why you get tests destroyed. But even if you take out the COVID stuff, which maybe they deserve some blame, maybe they don't. The fact of the matter is that there's not a lot of room for error. And not a big margin of, where you can afford failure. And these failures in these other places exacerbate the failure across the board. And it's amazing to me. We don't hear more complaints about the Democratic leadership because to go from a year ago, January 14th or January 20th or whatever, you want to date it to the COVID relief bill to today, if you and I had sat there and go like January 14th, 2022, nothing's going to have passed. Nothing. There'll be no filibuster reform. Nothing will have passed. No one will be, there'll be just arraigning some people about January 6th, but it will be so contentious that people are just going to be able to write it off as political. Biden will be less popular than Donald Trump. We would have said, hey, we need to stop. People need to not have this happen, right? Like this has been the plan.
We were talking about adding Puerto Rico as statehood. We were talking about, you know, adding people to the Supreme Court. I mean, there was a sense, I thought, that we knew there was an emergency, right? I mean, this was going into the election. Yep. We knew there was an emergency. Something terrible was happening. I mean, Donald Trump, and it wasn't just COVID. It was everything. And we realized it. And then suddenly it was like, well, never, you know, we're just going to go back to normal. We're going to, you know, go and haggle over some spending bills for, you know, a year, and they won't pass because, you know, we only have a 50-50 Senate. And we'll just pretend, I don't know, party like it's 2000 and, you know.
Yep. Good thing is at least we have the one thing they have achieved is we have that strong Republican Party that they wanted so badly, right? Strong parties. Well, now we have it. So congratulations to Biden and Pelosi.
We have one strong party. We have one strong party.
Exactly.
We do. And they are very strong and getting stronger, by the way. So, we should all be very happy.
Heather, I could talk to you for another couple hours, but we're going to have to wait and do that in a couple more weeks. But as always, a real pleasure. Folks, check out the Uber blog, Hullabaloo, at digbysblog.blogspot.com still?
Just blogspot, digbysblog.net, sorry.
.net.
Digbysblog.net.
And of course at Salon. Thanks so much, Heather. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. It was fun to talk to you.
Let's just bring her on. Do we have Francesca in the, ladies and gentlemen, making her way into the Zoom. She Hello. Here? Okay. There she is. Oh. Francesca Fiorentini, the host of the, what is it? It's the
Bituation
Room.
That's right.
And, you got it. Welcome back to the program. How are you feeling? Was that too? Is that a?
I made the mistake of watching this show. I think that's what I did. I was like, all right, I'm going to come in there. It's going to be good. We're going to watch some clips. We're going to have fun. And then I'm just like,
Friday.
Yeah. Oh. Right. I know. It's supposed to be casual, but it's just deeply depressing Friday.
Super cash. No, that was great. Bring Heather back in. She's got way more to say than I do. I was going to like bring out some puppets and lighten the mood or something.
We could use some puppets. We could use some lighting.
I got them back there. One of them weirdly looks like Chris Hayes, which I know you've been watching lately. So. We'll do it.
Wait, what? Will you get a Chris Hayes puppet back there?
I don't know. He's got a Chris Hayes vibe. I don't feel like getting up. The point is, God damn it. God damn it.
We just ruined her visit.
There needs to be some sort of Sam Seder puppet, right? For all that big Comcast and Google money that you're
You
getting.
Just take the tie off the Chris Hayes puppet. It's pretty much the
exactly.
Same.
Just rub some dirt on the face at this point. And then,
that's good to see you guys. Thank you for having me on. Emma, good to see you.
See you.
Happy New Year.
Second. Happy New Year. Wait, let's start with some of the big news that may be relevant to some of our New York viewers.
Yeah.
Maybe even our tri-state viewers. Do tell.
Yeah, the podcast that Sam doesn't really know how to pronounce, The Bituation Room, is going to be live.
I feel uncomfortable saying that.
You can say it. It's a verb, not a noun, and everyone can be a bitch, all right? Let's be real. Yeah. Okay, so The Bituation Room is going to be live on March 10th at the Bell House, featuring the host, one of the hosts of The Majority Report, Sam Seder, as well as myself, as well as comedian Matt Lieb, and council member Tiffany Caban is going to be there. So, guys, March 10th, I'm testing viral fate here.
Wait, is that a picture of me? Is that me?
No, there's no way.
My God.
Sam just looking real strong in his Thanos
tank.
Yeah. And, there's my cat up there.
Artist rendering, for sure. I'm not cut like that. But
it's barely visible. It could be accurate. Well, I mean, you're hiding.
That was generous. That was very generous.
It was super generous. That is awesome. I'm going to need the sketches for that.
Yeah. So anyway, you guys get tickets. It'll be fun. It'll be good. Obviously, vax checked, masked when you're not drinking copious amounts of whiskey or whatever we'll be doing. It'll be good. We'll make it fun. And I think hopefully by March 10th, things will be on the downswing over there in Brooklyn.
Don't doubt
Manhattan,
it.
I don't know, but Brooklyn for sure will be fine.
I think things are already starting to
report saying basically that Omicron, they think, has peaked at this point in New York City and in some of the areas of the Northeast. So
nice. So they've been checking the fecal matter quite religiously.
Actually,
which is my favorite detail of all this, right? That it's like, oh, we're just testing our poo every day.
That is like what I thought they were going to be doing. At one point, I thought they were going to be doing that at like colleges, and I thought they were going to be doing that at schools, like that they were going to be testing essentially the sewage from these places on the reg, because then you get the sense like, okay, it's here. Let's do some more specific testing, and then we'll do pool testing. There was all these plans. Wasn't there, like, we're going to do pool testing? Like, for we're going to pool, you know, we will...
What is pool testing?
Well, pool testing is, like, when you say, like, okay, maybe you do it from fecal matter, from sewage, or other... Like, we're not going to do... We're not going to test each individual sample. We're going to take... we got 500 people in this school. We're going to 100 people are going to put all their samples into one bag. We're going to test that bag. If that's clean, then we know that 100 people are clean and we go on to the other 100 people. If it's not, then we start to do it in pools and we do it smaller. And that's the way that, and then like all of that just sort of seemed to disappear at one point.
Well, the sewage testing is active in North Dakota. That's the main reason they find it is like, oh, it's in Grand Forks because nobody else gets tested the normal way. They just have to do it in the sewage.
No, the testing exists. I don't know about on a school level.
That was in Boston. They were doing that too, right? I think he said.
Yeah. Did he say that? I don't remember, but
before we move on, I do just want to say, guys, get tickets to the habituation room. You know, maybe we'll all make you poop in a bag or a pool, and then we'll group test before we go live, but it'll be good. Bell House, March 10th. That's a Thursday.
Are you going across the country?
I'm going to set up some shows in New York, but it's a little gauche right now to be like, hey, what's up? Put me on your show. Because, like, everything's really shut down, so I'm trying to wait.
No, I mean with the podcast.
The podcast is not on. We did a show in Portland, Oregon in August, which was awesome, of last year. But no, not on, like, a tour.
Because if you did that thing with the poo... That would be a good sort of like
it's a good publicity stunt. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yep.
That's right, what right, you're right,
associated with, right? I mean, you're the podcast that has its audience shitting bags.
Poop surveillance.
Yeah. You may take a hit in terms of reputationally.
Yeah, but it'd be worth it. You know, the numbers, like maybe the reviews will be bad, but like the
all
numbers.
Press
will be
is good press.
Absolutely.
That's right. I mean, and there would be like probably like local TV there as everybody walks out with their gift bag, I guess.
Of someone else's shit.
Exactly. First of all, don't you feel like, Sam, if they actually started testing in individual schools, just the PTA meetings at that point of like, why are they obsessed with my child's doo-doo? Like, it just, if they knew, if that were happening, like if Republicans knew that were actually happening anyway, I feel like they would make more of a thing about it. They would start pooping in bags and take it away so that their poop
totally
can't be tested.
We should try to start that, actually. Get conservatives to poop in bags and not down the toilet because they don't want to be surveilled.
They're already drinking their urine to get rid of the vaccine. So
see, I knew we were going to find a way to lighten it. I knew.
A mass movement to constipate 50% of the population. Where they are restricting their bowel movements so that the authoritarian left can't go and play with their fecal matter. There it is. Well, we figured that out. That's good. What have you been covering on the Bituation Room? News?
News, views, fun segments. Yeah, I have a comedian on every week and an expert or an activist on every week. What the hell? Last week we had Alicia Garza, who is a co-founder of the hashtag Black Lives Matter movement. She's a political strategist on, and we talked to her similarly about, like, look, we've made inroads into the Democratic Party, but not enough. And but we can't give up on the Democratic Party because we are locked into them. So what do we do? It's like, you know, we're gaining ground, but we are still losing it. And so it's, I think, the importance of social movements, of public pressure, and like actually making demands. I mean, I think a lot of organizations got in the room on the Biden transition team. Now, whether or not they've gotten anything that they asked for is, I think the answer is no.
Right.
Right. So what was the point? And what are the stakes? And what are the consequences for Democrats when they don't deliver?
Well, I think and not just getting into the room, you need to be you need to be around the president not as a, you know, not as seeking something, but as the person who's making the decisions. I mean, you know, I think Ron Klain was good enough to allow certain, and I don't mean nice enough, but I'm saying, like, from a perspective of what we would want, someone who is willing to have people come into the room. But there's a lot of really ghoulish people, I am sure, around Biden right now. And we're starting to see the impact of that. And just even the idea of, like, again, I mean, I keep bringing this up, but just having the power, having the momentum, and then just willingly giving it away because of some misguided. There's a story about this is was interesting to me, and I think it's indicative of the entire Democratic leadership. Politico reported that there have been some Democratic lawmakers who have been trying to gently push out Representative David Scott, of the head of the House Agriculture Committee. I don't follow the House Agriculture Committee specifically.
Oh, it's the best committee.
Well, I mean, it's actually a big, important one, but one I feel like Democrats have probably sort of punted a little bit on. But he is a Georgia Democrat. He is 76 years old. And this entire article, as far as I can tell, is gently saying that the guy has some form of dementia. And he needs to be removed. But we have this, you know, like we saw the same article about Dianne Feinstein months ago, based upon, you know, what I know about this, it doesn't get better.
Yeah.
There is no going, it doesn't go back better. This guy's been in office for 17 years. Dianne Feinstein's been in office for, I don't know, maybe half the audience listening was probably not even born before
my lifetime.
Leahy, you've got Biden and Pelosi. I mean,
Pelosi is the case, is the test case for this. I mean, she's at least like maybe she's still considering retiring after this term. We still don't know, but
it's unbelievable. I mean, and Breyer, there's something fundamentally wrong with this generation. With all due respect to members of that generation, I'm not so happy with mine either. But the arrogance and narcissism that is associated with this, that there is no one else. No one else who could take this job and do anything with it. No, I mean, Fauci, I would say the same thing about Fauci, too. It's like, come on, man, like good, bad, indifferent as to what your skill set is. How does that guy sit there and think maybe I'm becoming a distraction, but there's no one else who can do this
job?
I
don't know if it's a generational thing. I just think it's like the nature of power and celebrity, too. When you get
celebrity of the House Agricultural Committee, you know.
Well,
TMZ all up in there.
I mean, if you can't actually be a celebrity some other way, you know. I mean,
and the psychology of somebody who seeks power too, like once it's achieved and once it's there, they or somebody who runs for office, they have a big ego already, and then when you get the power, it just makes it worse.
But aren't you tired? Like it's 76, guys. Where do you want to be? Obviously, I'm going to be one of those old ladies just draped in different shades of purple. I'm already there. You know, just sort of, you know, like a weird wizard with like that smells like patchouli. Like, that's the kind of life that I want at 76. Why do you want that? Like, aren't you tired of being in government? Isn't there already a soft landing pad? I don't get that. Like, Nancy Pelosi, how much money is she worth? She's, you know, she's trading stocks. She can comfortably do even more of that out of office.
I don't get it either. And like, does she think that she's doing her legacy favors at this point? Like, you know, get out while you're on top.
Also,
I don't want her to get it. I think it's just.
Why do you want to be in power if you don't have any concrete policy goals that you want to achieve? You've already been Speaker of the House and the top House Democrat for a million years.
Yep.
So then just, you know, retire with your. I guess maybe we shouldn't give her such little credit. She still has many, many years to insider trade legally and capitalize on that.
But how is she going to run out of time to spend the money?
There's a lot of grandchildren, okay? They need their ice cream. Sorry, I'm just trying to do my... There's a lot of speaking over dentures with Nancy.
Yeah.
pretty good, you know. Actually.
Well, here's the thing. When Christmas rolls around, my grandchildren all want their own toys, and they can't share ever. And that's why I need, you know, we got to trade
all
that Facebook
core,
stock.
Actually,
or is it Meta?
Yeah.
Here's the other thing. I don't know how you determine that someone in office is also like has dementia. Is it like you've hugged 8 Republicans too many? You know, like you get one hug, you know, or like, because remember Feinstein was like, Lindsey Graham, I love you, mama. Like, just like, what did, he was like, dad?
This is the best illicit judiciary hearing I've ever had. I mean, that, like, yes, unbelievable. Totally lost sense of like where, oh, right. Yeah. No, they wouldn't allow a hearing from Merrick Garland 9 months out, but we're 3 weeks out from, okay, right. Yeah. No. What? Where am I? What's going on? Yeah. No, horrible. I mean, just.
And also, you know, when you like, you know, old people, this is, I'm not trying to be ageist here. We all understand we're not trying to be ageist, but like a small child, when you try to take something away from an elderly person and they don't understand, you know, it's like a remote or like, you know, whatever it is, the crossword.
Your driver's license.
Right. Yeah, exactly. The driver's license. Come on, grandma. And I feel like Feinstein's definitely doing that. Oh, I'm demented. I'll show you, you know, that type of.
For someone like Feinstein and for someone like this guy, there needs to be staffers who are willing to come out and say, there is I'm not going to do this on background. I'm not going to do this anonymously. I'm going to come out and stake my career on it. They won't do it because they won't get hired by the next person who's like, well, you told everybody that Dianne Feinstein didn't know what city she was in at any given time, and I can't trust you to not, you know, tell the press that, you know, I'm cheating on my husband, and so you're not going to work for my office, and, you know, that type of thing. And that's where we're at. We're sort of trapped into this type of situation, and I don't know what the answer is. It really is... It is really disturbing. And you know, and like you see it with like Breyer, like how the hell is that guy not retiring at this point? Like what kind of sheer insanity is that? And it was horrible for Ruth Bader Ginsburg to hang in there, but it's even worse for Breyer because he saw the example of what happened with Ginsburg. So, oh, God. Well,
he's got another book tour. It's harder to sell books and go on the Colbert Show when you aren't currently a sitting Supreme Court justice. It's just like, you know, your publisher's going to be pissed at you.
Unbelievable. I mean, really, it is that, and it's insane.
It's not the Colbert Show anymore. It's the Late Show with Stephen Colbert, which now is terrible. I can't believe how far he's fallen. But.
of the late shows.
I mean,
up there.
Someone's looking to go on there when she comes to New York.
Bring your bag. God.
If I were going on there, I'd be like, how dare you? He is wonderful, and I love him in every way. I wish I were going on.
Next up, they had a show, and they collected their audience's poo.
On that work, Francesca.
This
sits there and crosses legs. I'm sorry. I'm just fantasizing. Keep going, Sam.
I'm in favor of promoting vaccinations, as I think as people know. In fact, I do on this program promote the vaccinations. I do not get any type of funding from Pfizer or BioNet or.
Did you get your HPV vax yet, Sam?
I have not actually, but I'm looking into that because I may have aged out, but I did get my Shingrix. And I'm going to get my shingles vaccination. I'm going up for my second shot probably next week. I still have. I'm within the window.
Shingrix.
I should say that to the only extent that I've ever had any interaction with anybody from Pfizer, it was a guy back in college who was on the board of directors and the CEO of Pfizer, and that guy hated my guts. So that's the only connection I have with Pfizer. But with that said. You will not see me doing what this dude did, although I'm sure it's for best. But this is a guy who testified at the Dallas City Council meeting Wednesday, was looking to promote vaccinations. Sometimes folks, I don't know, like this gets sort of, this is sort of aligned with like, is it worth promoting the Bituation Room by collecting people's poo? Here is this dude.
Vaccinate! You're gonna get corona from Mona. Don't vaccinate. Don't wait. Don't hesitate. You got to vaccinate in the Lone Star State. Vaccination is so great. Vaccinate me all day long. Vaccinate your daddy and mom. Vaccinate my body. Vaccinate me at the party. I vaccine dream. I love the vaccine all day long. I want to vaccinate your mom. I want to stick it deep in your arm. Omar, where are you? I want to vaccinate you, but you can't hear my song. Vaccinate me in my thong. Vaccination, right or wrong. Dr. Fauci, give me that ouchie. I want it in my body. Vaccinate me too. Go to the party. Omar is back. Vaccinate me, white or black. Vaccinate you. Vaccinate who? Vaccinate you all.
I think he wrote these lyrics
vaccinate
down.
Vaccinate me in my thong. Vaccinate
you already said
player.
The thong line, sir.
I am a vaccination player. What can I say? I'm the real Ron Sayer. Prime tap, nine and nine.
What?
All the time, I blow your mind. I spit the rhyme. I commit the crime. I'm
how dare you interrupt him?
And I grind a shack, and I blow your mind one more time. Vaccinate your mind. Vaccinate your body. Vaccinate your life. Even vaccination party. I love y'all. Peace. God bless. Follow my Instagram. IG.
Your time is up.
Primetime Stein.
Thank you.
You know,
but please tell me he's not an actual.
That's
not
a bit. That's got to be a bit.
He's an anti-vaxxer on Instagram. I'm
pretty he is.
Right. Oh, he is?
Yeah.
Because if okay. so, that would have been like.
That makes a lot more sense.
That would have been a partner piece with the Lin-Manuel Miranda performance on the
Nancy Pelosi. And now I am pleased to announce
he's
to promote the new COVID vaccine, Mr. What is your rapper name?
Yeah, it's the kinds of things that, you know, I guess this guy actually is an anti-vaxxer, but there are a lot of liberal art pieces and songs that are actually just, if
well, that may be the case.
If presented to the general population, designed to do the opposite of what they say they're doing.
Do you think this guy did that and posed as a pro-vaccination person to make it look embarrassing?
Yes.
Or yes, okay.
I went to his Instagram and yeah. He does a lot of this stuff.
A lot of like fake promotion. Okay.
But hilarious, yo. Oh my God, I feel so owned. Hell yeah.
That was also not a good rap.
No. Very lots of Kendall Roy energy up in there.
Like a mechanical, like from a just from a musical standpoint, he sort of did like four different genres. And I don't know that he was conscious of that.
Apparently, he's done this kind of stuff in the past where he did another open mic in March where he talked about how he shit his pants during a run because the city closed the restrooms of the public park as a COVID precaution. So he's a frequent
very
guest.
COVID. He's a COVID denier is really what it's got to come down
to. Or he's a comedian slash attention seeker using COVID denial as a vehicle.
Ah, that could be interesting. We've never come across anything like that, have we? Where you might be like a comedian or a former comedian or ongoing comedian or just like a, you know, a masturbatory comedian who might find it profitable to downplay the risks associated with COVID and the efficacy of vaccine or let's say like, I don't know, maybe the dangers of the vaccine. Nobody—it's almost impossible to imagine.
No one would ever use this pandemic as like a career opportunity. That's just crass. I mean, even for comedy, right? Like, you know, I feel like people are above that.
It's impossible to imagine. Shall we talk about Joe Rogan too?
We should.
I'm sure you saw this.
Good segue. Yeah.
You know, we've been talking about Joe Rogan on this program for years, and I think you know Michael was of the mind, and I agreed with his assessment of this that the problem that Joe Rogan had was that he just read the wrong sources on some level. But I think here you can also see not only is he reading the wrong sources, he's not reading very much, and there is an arrogance that's associated with this that is I mean, look, we're all, you know, sitting here with a camera trained on us, so it involves a certain amount of narcissism and arrogance that's baseline.
Of course.
But, like, our audience is a fraction of what Joe Rogan's is. And
but what a fraction.
Well, it's I mean, it's
the best fraction.
It's the best fraction. But the point being is that you have a responsibility. And if you're going to go out there and make these bold proclamations about stuff, read two articles. Follow up on an article. Here is a Joe Rogan with Josh Zepps, actually, former HuffPost Live guy. He had a podcast that we used to record in the studio for a couple of times back in the day. And he's with Rogan, and Rogan makes this claim about myocarditis, which I found just sort of fascinating because, well, we'll talk about it afterwards, but I looked it up. It was September 24th. We talked about this dynamic because I had heard about that myocarditis, and I have kids who are getting vaccinated around that time. I had a son who's eligible for vaccination coming up, and I want to know about it. But here's Joe Rogan, and this is a fascinating segment.
For young boys in particular, there's an adverse risk associated with the vaccine. It's like
yes.
a 2 to 4-fold increase in the instances of myocarditis.
Yes, but you know what?
Hospitalization.
You know that there's an increased risk of myocarditis in among that age cohort from getting COVID as well, which exceeds the risk of myocarditis from the vaccine.
I don't think that's true. I don't think it's true. No. I don't think it's true that there's an increased risk of myocarditis from people catching COVID that are young versus increased risk of myocarditis from the vaccine.
No, there is. There's both.
Well, let's look that up because I don't think that's true. Myocarditis is more common after COVID-19 infection than vaccination. But is this with children? Yeah, we're talking about young people.
Men and boys aged under 30 after this is what it says here.
With children is the issue.
Well, no, we were talking about 15-year-olds.
Well, we're talking about young children.
Male child. 12 to 17. Yeah.
12 to 17, more likely to develop myocarditis within 3 months of catching COVID at a rate of 450 cases per million infection. This compares to 67 cases of myocarditis per million at the same time following their second dose of Pfizer.
Yeah, so you're about 8 times likelier to get myocarditis from getting COVID than from getting the vaccine.
That's interesting.
Now,
that is not what I've read before, but also it's like, when we're reading these things, it's like, what are we getting this from? Was this from
the
VAERS report? But even from
the
VAERS reports, when they report this stuff, it's like the amount of people that report, it's the underreporting.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean,
now we have the audio to keep going on that because that's the way the video, and I want to do that. But go ahead. But I just want to tell people because we should get to that. But that is fascinating.
Yes.
Because I got, you know, and he has subsequently tweeted out the articles that misinformed him to justify why he did this. Mm-hmm. One was a Substack from some guy who's a lunatic, the other was a Guardian piece that is from early September. And even the Guardian piece, if you read this, it does not. It is so sort of like tentative to base your
right.
your assessment of why people should not take a vaccine, which I assume he understands the efficacy of, on a piece that you read 4 months ago that that was just suggestive. It is just even the title of the piece, Boys More at Risk from Pfizer Jab Side Effect Than COVID, suggests study. So you're going to go out to your millions of people.
A lot of young men.
Young
yes.
men.
Knowing, no,
your,
knowing
key demo,
your audience.
Your
right.
key demo, probably 75% of his audience.
Oh,
maybe,
yeah.
maybe it's 50. Well, it doesn't matter. We're talking hundreds of thousands, if not millions. He himself knows exactly how influential he is. And so you've got a responsibility. It's not just about you flying by the seat of your pants. You can't both recognize that you are an influential person and talk about life and death issues, literally, and not do your effing homework. This piece, it goes in. This is back in September of 2021. Their analysis of medical data suggests that boys 12 to 15 with no underlying medical conditions are 46 times more likely to be diagnosed with vaccine-related myocarditis than ending up in hospital with COVID over a four-month period. So this is not even necessarily talking about myocarditis between vaccines and getting COVID.
And now we
COVID.
Have more definitive data, as was read by, but not absorbed by Rogan there.
And now there are more people who are getting vaccinated than are getting COVID. So you could argue that, well, okay, if it's 40 out of a million versus, 150 out of a million, 150 out of a million who get COVID versus 40 out of a million who get the shot. You could argue if you get everyone the shot, there's going to be more cases of myocarditis. But the bottom line is that COVID has other problems associated with it than myocarditis. Like, I'm curious as to what he thinks myocarditis is.
Well, they never think about long COVID.
Okay. But now this is at current U.S. infection rates, the risk of a healthy adolescent being taken to hospital with COVID in the next 120 days is 44 per million. This doesn't even match the carditis. This doesn't even purport to say what he says it purports to say.
There's nothing about myocarditis.
And then there is a bunch of other studies that come out later that month. In fact, the New York Times had a piece on September 1st, 10 days before this other piece, that showed you have the heart problem more common after COVID-19 than vaccination. And also, if you're convinced this is your key demo, you're telling hundreds of thousands of them not to get the vaccine because of this myocarditis. Who did you talk to about what myocarditis is and how serious it is? Because the only reason why I know this piece was up there was because I was talking to a friend whose dad's a pediatrician. It was like, kids get myocarditis from the flu. This is not a rare thing. And it is problematic, but it won't get them in the hospital. They gotta just chill for a couple of days.
But it sounds scary. It sounds scary, and that's why Rogan's been amplifying it only the sort that he wants to, like, the fear he wants to amplify, and not the fear of coronavirus itself.
Is it case? Well, all of his listeners are also, like, fit and thin, you know? So, like, they're young men, and, like, they're not fat. Ew. And only fat people get COVID. So, yeah, I mean, if you get COVID and you're thin, you're great. And there's nothing to worry about. Also, here's my thing about COVID and Rogan and his just, like, extreme toxic masculinity, let's call it what it is, like, you want to talk about the long-term effects of COVID on erectile dysfunction and, like, your penis? Let's talk about it. Because it's funny how he never talks about that thing. There have been studies, and I wonder what Rogan has to say about that stuff. He's so obsessed with his own masculinity. He's so obsessed with being a tough guy, and he's got to be strong. So I want that, number one. But number two, I'm also like, it's amazing because Rogan, someone described him as being so open-minded that his brain is leaking out of his head. And that is a really good way to describe him, except when it comes to any kind of scientific evidence. So usually if a white supremacist goes on Rogan and they're like, hey, you ever think about like an ethnostate, you know, just like white people over here, you know, and like, we'll define white, we'll like, you know, obviously no Jews. And he's like, wow, that's like amazing. That's like a really amazing idea. And then someone who's read scientific studies goes on and says, hey, what you're saying is false. He's like, no. See, it's younger than 30. Oh, it's 12 to 17. Oh, it must be under 12. Oh, well, what is that journal? Oh, a scientific journal. Where do you find that? A library? Okay. You know, like that, he pushes back.
Right. I mean, exactly. But the real, I mean, to me, it's like, I don't even know what, his intent is in this. And I don't doubt that his brain leaks and he's just excited and he just wants to go full throttle. And this is what it's about because he perceives himself as a comedian or some, iteration of it. But the bottom line ultimately is this. Millions of people listen to your show, whether you like it or not. He obviously likes it. You know what the demos are. He knows what they are. I have a vague notion of it because I'm in this, you know, same area. We can see, you know, that it's what the age breakdowns are and the gender breakdowns. And you have a responsibility. And if he won't assume that responsibility, because he doesn't want to in any way inhibit his free form style, then it's incumbent upon people who give him a platform to assume that responsibility.
Well, that's why he has, you talk about how this is an arrogance, right? He has a how many million dollar deal with Spotify? Like, we're talking about this with politicians and why they feel like they're above reproach. It's a similar thing. He has this ultimate security and he has the backing of a major company in Spotify. That's just how it works. And it's not, sorry, go on that.
I was just going to say, it was in April that he said 21-year-olds shouldn't get vaccinated. And yeah, like the free speech is just free speech for entertainers to not face any sort of responsibility about the output they have, even if they're going to decide that all of a sudden I'm an amateur epidemiologist. And here's Brett Weinstein to just talk about how ivermectin's a perfect prophylactic. Like, yeah, I mean, it really frustrates me how free speech, you're censoring a guy if you criticize a major media.
Exactly.
$100 million, Bradley just sent it to us, that this deal is. Yeah. But just, I want to point out before we move too far past the clip, watch his brain try to work backwards from the massive amount of misinformation that he's consumed. So yes, it is about arrogance, and I think yes, it is about like money insulating you to a large degree and being able to do whatever you want to do editorially in that way. But he's so consumed with misinformation at this point, and that's saturated his brain to such. But that too. But like it all becomes a feedback loop, and then you're so far down the rabbit hole that. He is very indicative of millions and millions of people in this country. When they're presenting with information, it takes so much more than just showing somebody facts to de-radicalize people. It's a long, long, long process. And you just saw the tip of the iceberg of a situation in which Rogan is presented with actual information there. It takes a much longer process, and he's so insulated with money and with adoration that's never going to happen.
It's more than that, though. I just want to say it's like, it's more than just, I don't think he's the victim. He perpetrates this stuff because Rogan has spawned not just comedy careers, but he spawned a whole world of wellness and sort of like crazy, you know, muscle milk. Influencers, that's not what they are, but you know what I'm saying.
Been out there. That's been
spin-off wellness influencers that have been off there, and he has created them, and they're all hawking their supplements. They're all hawking their like natural remedies, and if you're just fit enough, you will, you know, COVID
that's
will bounce off
for
you.
A long time. Like, you had this guy, Gary Null, who I think still even is...
Right,
like,
but
on-
this guy Rogan, so, I mean, Rogan is very, very mainstreaming this kind of stuff, like, I'm going to take bull testicles for a
while. Right, well, but I want to stay on this for a second, because I want to play the very thing, because this is like, at the very least, this is a, you know, a teachable moment for people. Like, you know, like he is putting out these the Guardian piece after the fact as justification. You should know that this New York Times piece, New York Times is not an obscure newspaper, incidentally. People are aware of it. This came out 9 days beforehand. Now, he could talk about VAERS, but VAERS is in this country. Aside from all the things you could say about VAERS, where it's just like people who are not doctors.
It's Wikipedia for anybody that wants to put up their like random COVID experience.
My elbow hurt after my shingles thing. It was 2 weeks later,
must
but my
have
elbow
been the
hurt.
Pfizer.
I'm going to go into VAERS and I'm going to put it in there. And it was my shingles vaccine.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. But this is New York Times and it's talking about a study, myocarditis risks. That takes place in a country called Israel, which is not America. And 16 and 17 year old boys, it was, and they had hundreds of thousands of people, 880,000 people in this study. That's a big study. That is a significant portion of the population that was vaccinated and unvaccinated in Israel. So this is the Israelis. No VAERS, New York Times, 10 days before the article he puts out after the fact to justify, which didn't even say what it did. It's just, it's laziness. But here he is grasping for theirs. We only have this on audio. Play this.
Depending upon who you ask and like what it is, it's either 1% under, like with Harvard did a study on the VAERS report about vaccine injuries. And I think they were talking at the time about the HPV vaccine. And they said it was 1% of the adverse events were reported by the VAERS system. And I know people that have tried to report things in the VAERS system. It's very complicated.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very difficult to do. So I don't think we get a great idea.
I don't trust American epidemiological data very much, but the fact that it's a global pandemic and that there are lots of like wonky geniuses in Germany and like South Korea and stuff doing a lot of this research as well, I think that in general I sort of trust the consensus of most of the people that are smarter than me about it.
Yeah.
And that's,
yeah.
That's the data that I've heard about it. But I mean, it's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, and that's about basically where they stopped talking about it. And good for, you know, Zeps, because you know, I think maybe because he's from Australia, doesn't have, he doesn't feel like he needs to, you know, sort of protect. But that's the point. It's like, you know, we could talk about the authoritarian nature of the U.S. government is mandating policies. But what about the authoritarian nature of the Chinese or the Cubans or the Germans or the Dutch?
Just
or
no sense of any other country's response to this stuff, let alone South Africa, like which dealt with, I think in post-curfews at like 8:30 p.m. to deal with Omicron. And now we just assume like, oh, Omicron's not serious. We just don't need to do anything about it.
And that pairs very well with Rogan's rant from a few months ago where he was like, America is the greatest nation in the world and we've spurned innovation and it's all because we are like the most representative. I mean, when did this guy just become a generic red-pilled patriot? But I mean, that's kind of, I think, what that's what
that is exactly what he's become.
Right.
Yeah. We're the greatest government on the face of the earth, mostly because we don't have a government. Hell yeah.
I mean, he's been. It's been clear that he's more comfortable talking about like the demographic threat of Muslims than it is like to Bernie or Cornel West, who were frankly just on because they were campaigning to his audience. So Joe knew that they were going to have kid gloves. And like, I respect the leftists that are invited on there, but they're going on there because they're also showing a lot of respect and deference and friendliness to Joe Rogan. And like, I don't know.
And here's the other thing: with all due respect to Joe Rogan, I do not believe that he is leafing through reports from Harvard about, you know, just general health situations involving HPV or VAERS or anything else. What he seems to fail to understand is that he is getting his information pushed to him. It is being cherry-picked before it sits on his desk. And if he's going to pontificate about it, and he is not going to go out. Do your own research does not mean answer the email from your friend who is anti-vax. Now, I don't know what that study looks like, and I'm going to look it up. But if you get a study, if you're just an average person and you and someone sends you a study because they want you to look at it, if you're going to go out the next day, a week, a month, whenever it is, and tell a million other people about it who look to you for information, people who are in the perfect demographic to both listen to you and to decide what they're going to do about their own health decisions, you have more of a responsibility than opening up that email. I don't give a shit if you're a comedian or whatever you brand yourself as. Some type of performance artist. You're not responsible. An artist makes their own moral universe. Fuck that shit. You're responsible. You're responsible. And anybody associated with producing that show, with promoting that show, is responsible. And does that mean that you should be locked up? No. It just means you're fucking responsible. And so when people sit here and say, you're responsible for people not vaccinating, getting long COVID, you're responsible for people not vaccinating, dying, or giving it to their grandmother, and them dying, you're responsible. That's not censoring you. That's just telling you you're fucking responsible. That's it.
Yeah.
And stuff it doesn't matter. You're also rich and famous.
Yeah,
so,
and the artist, I mean, please, like, if you want, like, that, you can't say that what the artist makes their own moral universe and then engage in COVID information or misinformation.
Yeah, you decided to be an epidemiologist
in
this moment.
Yes, right. So
the grifter makes.
A comedian or whatever. I'm just a podcast host.
No, I mean, I think the grifter makes their own moral universe. He knows. And any channel, any host, anyone who tells you they are the truth, they are the end-all be-all, which we know is the fastest way to gain a following, is obviously lying to you, but he doesn't care. He doesn't care about any moral responsibility. He doesn't care about the people who die from listening to his show and taking his pseudoscience advice. He doesn't care. It's the money. So yeah, I give Spotify another year, and I think they will drop him. I do think it'll happen. It doesn't matter. He'll still make that amount of money. Spotify won't be, you know, they'll have, hopefully feel the pressure at some point. But he's long foregone any sense of responsibility because it's audience. It's an anti-establishment or a so-called anti-establishment audience full of young men who are strong and better than COVID.
Yeah, it's nuts. It's nuts. I didn't mean to talk about that for so long, but
I knew that would piss you off when I saw it yesterday.
The good news is now at least that dumbass myocarditis talking point that they've had is going to die with a certain segment of those people. But you know that thing has been around for a long time. I remember bringing that up. That was the first thing that I did when I was like, I send you remembering that I had that conversation when I was thinking about, like, what should I do about Saul and should he get vaccinated? And I just was lucky enough to know somebody who was a pediatrician and then went and started to read different articles about that myocarditis. And he just, you know, like,
Saul's doing great. Seems like, right.
I mean, yeah, you know, he's got his problems, but he's fine with the vaccine. He's not, he's got some issues with me, but that is completely unrelated. Mm. Yeah.
I will be right back.
Keep him away from Rogan.
All right. Emma's going to step out for a second. I know we have more fun stuff. Where's
really?
Yeah. And now I've lost it in this like sea of paper. I just, I can't. Oh, here it is. Okay. So let's see here. What was it? 10? Oh, this is good. Yeah.
10's pretty good, dude.
I like 9 too. Let's do number 9. Well, it's tough. They're both. Yeah, let's do number 9, and then we can do the blame Joe Biden thing. This is a One News Network. What One America? Is that what it is? One America Network. Dan Ball. Do you watch that a lot?
Dan Ball. Oh, every day. You know, morning coffee.
Get your Dan.
OAN,
get the ball rolling,
Mr. Ball.
Nice. He interviewed former President Trump. I'm sure you're aware of. And, you know, it's nice to see someone acknowledge that President Trump is not perfect. But you know who else wasn't perfect?
Now, look. He's not perfect. No one is. He sins. I sin. We all sin.
Oh, sin.
But as you know, who did our Savior, Jesus Christ, hang out with back in the day? Who did he use to spread his message or do his will?
Lepers.
Guess what? They weren't famous. They weren't politicians. They weren't rulers or tyrants. They were lepers. They were prostitutes. They were the blind and the deformed. The people that society had cast away. They were, in a word, deplorables. Sound familiar?
I've been cast away.
Now, wait a second. There's a lot that I have an issue with here.
All those edgelord lepers, you know, just making memes.
Hillary Clinton was like, listen, if someone's blind, someone's deformed or has leprosy, they
are in the basket.
But I don't understand. He starts like, I don't understand, like, even to how to diagram this out. He says, we all sin,
But who did Jesus Christ, back in the day, of course, who did Jesus Christ look to spread his message? And then, like, so how does that justify Donald Trump?
Well, then he says they weren't famous, they weren't politicians. Donald Trump is both of those things.
Exactly.
He's all those things.
What's the argument that Trump is...
calling me a leper?
Is it a leper? Are you saying I'm a leper?
That leper is at most a four. Okay, wow. What is going on with the leg? I'm not sure. This prostitute, I'm down, but I don't know. Also, not more than a six. Like, you know, I love... What did this come out of? What it was he... Was he just interviewing him? And then he was like, not perfect.
Not perfect. I think I was pretty perfect. But yeah, no, I've sinned. Sure. But lepers exist. So how about that?
Gross.
That's gross. Flesh is not falling off my body. So I got that going for me. And this is the argument that got him elected, I think, in many respects, that that Mike Pence was dishing out. But it's sort of mutated. Like, he's not perfect. He is God has sent him to get us three more seats on the Supreme Court. But this guy sort of like chews that up when he says the vehicle to do this is not going to be famous or a politician. I don't get it.
No, I mean, I think there's something, I don't know. Obviously, these Christian nationalists convince themselves that if you can find a Jesus who is not a good person, but who is literally every single deadly sin, just incarnate, who's done all the terrible things. Like, I don't know. Is it like a Lord of the Rings type thing where we destroy it in the eye of the thing and the wherever, you know?
Let me ask you this. Do you think there is anybody who watches that clip, who watches One America Network or whatever it is?
One.
Own America Network.
One.
Own.
OAN.
Own OAN.
OAN.
I say one.
Do you think there's anybody who watches that earnestly and stops and goes, hey, wait a second, that doesn't make any sense? Or do you think every single person who watches it is like, that makes total sense?
Every one of them, I think, knows that he's apologizing for Trump being pro-booster and vaccine.
Yes, and like, yes, that's exactly
and,
right.
And despite him doing that, he's still good for us. And I think that's the message.
That's what it is. Yep. He's like, the fact that he got a booster is like being blind or a leper.
He's like Jesus, but he doesn't want the lepers to be better. You know, he's got the medicine, but he doesn't administer it. Like, that's what they're basically saying. If you make a correlation between now and then, like, wasn't Jesus trying to heal the sick? Trump also, arguably, trying to get people boosted and getting them vaccinated, wants to heal or prevent the sick.
I don't think you know your Bible.
Get those money changers out of here.
Yeah. I don't think you know your Bible. Sorry.
What is your favorite story of the Bible? The Bible one.
All of them.
Yeah.
Couldn't choose.
Oh, that was an amazing
moment.
It would
be like...
In the primary.
Be like, which kid do you love the most? I can't do it.
Obviously Ivanka, but...
I mean, yes, Ivanka, but...
But in theory,
it would be hard for me to do. And frankly, I could rate them very quickly, actually. And
Tiffany doesn't count.
I was
like
going to say,
who
I leave off, Baron or Tiffany? Maybe both.
He likes Baron because he's tall.
This is also, since we did one America News Network or whatever the hell that is, let's do Newsmax. Greg Kelly, these guys are both just sort of like, I don't know, just it feels like Christian performance artists, yeah. Right? Is that
Kelly seems like a performance artist?
Totally.
Yeah.
He's the type of guy who you feel like, you know, in 25 years is going to be like, I did the same thing that dude from Dianetics did, or trading places. Just made a bet with somebody and look at what happened. Here he is responding to upticks in petty crime, I guess. Do we have data that shows nationally there's an uptick in petty crime, or is it there are some areas?
There's some high profile videos of some burglaries and stuff,
right.
But mainly the uptick has been murders and that sort of stuff.
Yeah. No. So I don't know about petty crime, but
here he is on Newsmax, and Well, I can't do it justice.
Oh, look at the Chiron.
They're also going after just ordinary stuff, not just high-end watches and things like that. At the drugstore, they're stealing nail polish and toothpaste and getting away with it. It's essentially not a crime in major parts of the country. If it's below $1,000, if nobody gets hurt, take it. Why not? So last night I went to the drugstore. Late at night, I kind of wanted some candy. I had not seen this before in New York City. Look at this. I know the Gillette razors are under lock and key. They're ridiculously expensive and very easy to steal. But did you know that Reese's peanut butter cups, licorice, Jolly Ranchers, gummy lifesavers are under lock and key? I don't blame the stores. They're being ripped off left and right. I blame the media. I blame Joe Biden. I blame all the dishonesty that has been promulgated about cops. This is one of the results.
He is, I mean,
if you look at the shoplifting figures, okay, I can tell you 30 years ago, 40 years ago, when I was working at the 5 and 10 downtown Worcester, my job was to follow kids who come into the store.
Ooh, snitch.
Yeah.
You could have used those glass cases that they have in the Duane Reade by Greg Kelly's probably incredibly expensive apartment in New York City.
But he's blaming Biden and for the uptick in shoplifting of candy.
The uptick in lifesavers under lock and key.
How is he able to take the package out and then just open it frantically and shove all the lightsabers into his mouth when he has to ask the attendant, can you get the key? Can you open it up?
I need my chocolate fix. Actually, I would like to do that in this office, but go ahead.
Don't bring that up.
He gives it away when he says they're not just stealing high-end stuff. They're stealing stuff like nail polish and toothpaste. It's because, like, yes, society isn't providing those sorts of things. And they're like, why is there a black market for things like detergent and toothpaste in this country? It's because people are really, really, really struggling to meet their needs.
They turn around, sell it to the dollar store.
Exactly. And, like, that's the thing is, like, if you know anybody who's working retail now, you'll know that, like, one of their main jobs is to, like, tell people no when they get up to the register and it turns out that they can't actually afford diapers and things like that. It's really actually depressing. So that's the real problem. And there's another story. I put this in the sound polls, Bradley, but there's these cops that there was a robbery going on at a Macy's in, I think, L.A.
I'll take it all.
And these two cops decided to not, they've been fired now, but they played Pokemon Go instead of,
good move.
Go up to Macy's.
There was a Snorlax down the street, Matt. So
I'm sorry if I'm doing what, Newsmax doesn't want me to in, criticizing cops, but they are fully funded to, be able to address anything like this. And like I said, like the actual rise in this sort of crime, I think is really overstated by these retailers.
And also, stealing toothpaste, fine. I mean, not really, but it's not an actual crime.
It's a symptom.
You see these kinds of news stories in a time of like massive income inequality, of corporations not paying their taxes. Like, let's focusing on the actual issue. Every single day, Jeff Bezos is however many billions of dollars richer and doesn't pay fuck all in taxes. So riddle me that, my friend, who looks like a marionette doll that has like come to life from some vintage 50s like dog and pony show. What is going on? So
like Howdy, it's like a fake representation of the Howdy Doody show, like a segment in there. So, is he the son of Ray Kelly?
Oh wow!
Oh, brilliant!
He does look like one of those.
You mean police commissioner?
Yes,
former police commissioner.
Yes, that man. Now
I got arrested under Ray Kelly multiple times. Hell yeah!
Did you for what?
The RNC 2004 protesting when Bush came to town. Remember that?
Yeah, I do that. Shoot, I was gonna do. I tried to hit the news thing and see if we could get some actual like scandal, but that's.
But so he's a real fascist. He's that. That's just.
Oh, he believes it.
It's just it's very convincing cosplay, I guess.
Or
the opposite.
We should also note that, like, I would be surprised not to see a rise in shoplifting at this point, because. Particularly right now, because you've got a lot of places going out of business or shutting down, getting rid of their employees, because of Omicron, because of all the lockdowns that don't exist. And by lockdown, I mean people deciding they didn't want to catch COVID, and so they don't go into businesses. And people have no, we don't have extended unemployment anymore. We have ended the payments for the child credit. If you work in any type of like gig work and your money is down, then there is no unemployment for you. You lose your job, no unemployment there. People are hurting right now is like going to, I think probably we're entering into the most desperate period during COVID in terms of money. I think that we've seen because
rent prices also skyrocketing.
Yep. Right now, I think is going to be the ugliest time because there is no help coming and we're basically moving into an era of austerity again, sort of unspoken austerity.
We're going to see more and more news stories about petty crime. That is what happens. I lived in South America for many years, and that's what happens when you have a vastly unequal society. And I would say that America is starting to look like the rest of the Americas that we've helped sort of destitute economically. But what happens is you focus on someone stealing a pack of gum, someone getting robbed from a motorcycle, you know, on a motorcycle or whatever it is. And that's all your focus. You pay no attention to families in the street, literally begging for food. Let's just focus on this one robbery. And it happens. And in these vastly unequal societies, yeah, there's a certain amount of violence and a certain amount of theft and robbery. And actually, the brilliance of capitalism is there's actually not even the amount that you would expect for the amount of inequality. We should be expecting far more shoplifting. We should expect far more, you know, petty theft because of where people have been left. And any stimulus check coming? I don't think so.
I mean,
what about paid federal leave? No.
Yeah, just to cut in on the stimulus check point, like the people that need stimulus checks, one of the first things that I overheard people talking about the pandemic relief was, I'm not in that system, right? I'm not going to get a check to in either direct deposit or they don't have my address. So there's nothing for me now. What do those people do?
Yep.
Yeah.
Let's go back for a moment. We were talking a little bit about January 6th. There's a lot of people who are going to be doing a lot of digging out today. We've seen it with Joe Rogan with his, the myocarditis. We are going to see it in terms of like January 6th with the sedition charge. Now, again, these are just charges. But really, for me, the most important thing to come out is that sort of like confirmation that they were waiting on the perimeter for with weapons. Like, wait, how did you know to wait on the perimeter for with weapons? Like, what was the, like, how did you know this spontaneous rally that just got out of hand would be holding a position and then calling for more weaponry? I just find that sort of hard to believe. And then, of course, also Matt Gaetz. Turns out there's more stuff on Matt Gaetz, too. So there's a lot of backing up doing. Tucker Carlson's going to have a little bit of backing up on just a couple of days ago, the St. Louis rally runner that apparently Tucker Carlson was accusing of being an agent provocateur went on Facebook. This guy looks like he has, frankly, some maybe some mental or emotional issues. I can't quite tell. For sure, I'm not, I imagine they are not helped by having his idol, Tucker Carlson, claim that he is an FBI.
Might make him a prime target for a bully like Tucker Carlson to, pick and say that he is the one working with the FBI.
He's got to come up with something here, but here is that guy responding.
What motivated me to D.C. was I was there to conduct the rally run for America. However, what drove me there was the fake news hatred for President Trump. I was there for a greater calling, to stand for what this nation was created on, freedom, democracy, and the defeat of evil. I believe God sent me there, just as the founders did since the dawn of this nation's inception. At no point while I was there did I think people would break into the Capitol. The crowd atmosphere was powerful, patriotic, and mostly peaceful. It was clear that the patriots gathered were there to address Congress using the First Amendment and redress their grievances.
Next slide.
I was clear of all wrongdoing in January 21 by the FBI and local law enforcement. I gave them a copy of my footage from my GoPro, which was submitted as evidence. Joseph McBride, as a defense attorney, had access to this believed the false story, which Fox and Tucker knowingly reported. So in short, the civil legal battles are just beginning.
There you go.
I feel great. I am proud I was there to stand for America when the spineless Congress would not. Now, a year later, I've teamed up with the Wolf of Washington to stand for America in the halls of Congress, Missouri 2nd District, as Wesley Smith's campaign manager. I never planned on being in the national spotlight. Due to unforeseen circumstances and bogus claims by Joseph McBride, here I am. I did what was needed last year to bring faith and hope to the American people, as I will continue to do for the rest of my life. I was moved into the front of the crowd, probably due to my size, but violent I was not. I was peaceful and recorded the whole interaction. I was nice and genuine to the police. Once this never-before-seen footage was acquired by the FBI and local police, I was cleared. I did nothing wrong. Dion, the crowd's energy was astonishing. It had my adrenaline pumping through the roof. It was like nothing I've ever experienced before.
Okay.
That's the one moment he chose to like modulate his voice in a different tone.
It's like a Gumby hostage video. I really don't know.
Well, to be clear,
he
does not want attention.
Right.
He is not the type of guy who looks for attention. Now, he used to be, I guess he's like the, what was it, the Cardinals, St. Louis Cardinals?
Unofficial mascot.
Unofficial mascot.
No, he appointed himself the mascot, and then he said that he would run around the stadium in order to create an energy that would get...
Hey, listen.
So now I feel like an asshole.
No, like, I know. How many times have you done that? I jumped on one foot for a half a day, so the Giants would
convert.
Year
they won the Super Bowl in 2011, 2012. I would wear the same Giants jersey to bed before the games, and
here's the point. How is it that Tucker Carlson keeps doing this? They have millions of dollars of resources, and how is it that they keep finding people and attack and are wrong? And how is it that all the media critics who love Tucker Carlson don't seem to point this out? I mean, can you imagine, like, you know, and there's been instances where, like, online, you've got people who, like, dox people and accuse them of being something, and it turns out they're wrong, because a lot of people love to play detective on Twitter or whatever it is, and it's dangerous. But this guy's got millions of dollars of resources. Can't they verify anything? They did this with that other guy, that Ray Epps guy, too, right? And, I mean, this is their own people. I think these people should be held to account if they did anything wrong. But the idea that they're going to go out and put out words that they're agent provocateurs without any evidence, because there couldn't have been any evidence. I mean, what evidence is this guy providing? I mean, everybody knew who he was, except for the multi-million-dollar operation that is to determine truth and deliver it to the American public.
Those Fair same balance. Media folks that should be criticizing Tucker may have their own troubles of saying prematurely that nobody was charged for Jan 6th or that everybody was unarmed at Jan 6th. If you search that person's tweets, you might find those tweets.
Yes, we're subtweeting. We're subtweeting, you know, but it is the case. I mean, like, you know, this should be out there. I mean, and generally when Tucker Carlson sort of targets people, they end up paying a big price, and they are who they claim to be. Like, maybe they were somebody who suggested a new curriculum at a elementary school or something like that, you know, and Tucker doesn't like it. So they attack, just like his predecessor, Bill O'Reilly, did, who was very helpful, I would imagine, in getting an abortion provider killed by promoting that. But Tucker doesn't seem to pay a price. What happened with that NSA stuff? Is he still being targeted by the NSA?
Definitely.
Give me a break. Unbelievable.
Look, in May 2001 when he was attacking a non-binary CDC worker for being a left-wing activist. He loves this sort of stuff.
Yep.
No, but I mean, at least here's my thing. Like, why don't, like, he's on your side, this guy. He was there. He loves Tucker Carlson up until the point he was called FBI or CIA by Tucker Carlson. Reach out to him, you know, be like, here's like a mill. Calm, you know, here's a lawyer. Here's some security. I'm going to say some lies about you. You even have the money to do that if you really want to full false flag this. But of course he doesn't care.
Just no, he's power. He picks the most powerless person that they probably kind of know a little bit about in that crowd, and then, you know, make them the scapegoat for what he wants to do. He's despicable.
Just because he paints his face red doesn't mean he doesn't have feelings, that he doesn't have integrity. He just legitimately wanted to overthrow the government, you know, and yeah, but he's a Trumper.
I would like to figure out if there is a opportunity on Trade Sports to vote to bet against the candidate that he is the campaign manager for. I just want to see if we can work that out, because I could use.
They painted in green.
Saul's, college savings into that.
The odds probably might not be good. You can bet $10,000 to win $5,000.
Well, I mean, every little bit helps. All right, I got two more clips here that I want to do. I want to do the Christian cinema thing and then the Google it. Kyrsten Sinema does not want to change the filibuster, it appears, and Joe Biden apparently just figured this out. Here she is expressing her rights for the voting rights rights bills, but it is less important that we stop the disenfranchisement of voters and more important that we uphold a tradition that has been changed 3 times in the past 5 or 6 years, at least.
Including actually, something that she just proposed a few weeks ago about the debt ceiling, I believe.
Wait, yeah, exactly. Add one more of those. It's been changed only 1 time in the past 3 months. Here it is.
Well, it didn't, wasn't successful, I think, but.
No, they did it.
Oh, they did
ceiling.
It. Sorry. Oh, never mind.
Eliminating the 60-vote threshold on a party line with the thinnest of possible majorities to pass these bills that I support will not guarantee that we prevent demagogues from winning office. Indeed, some who undermine the principles of democracy have already been elected. Rather, eliminating the 60-vote threshold will simply guarantee that we lose a critical tool that we need to safeguard our democracy from threats in the years to come.
Shh, I like this part.
It is clear that the two-party strategies are not working, not for either side, and especially not for the country.
Oh, squeeze out a tear.
Very dramatic. You know what? I would rate that as like a classic audition for an acting class freshman year.
Yes.
Comes in. This is the monologue I'm reading for this class. Not well done.
Mm-mm.
I did not buy the fact that her heart was broken.
Does it shock
about
you
all
to
the
learn
failures?
That she has a theater background?
It was only as far as I would hope that it wouldn't be terribly extensive.
I'm a former theater kid, but that is so on the money. Just the theater kid
energy,
like, energy coming out of there. Mm. This is my time. And yeah, she's trying to cry. She couldn't. She didn't go full Rittenhouse with it, but not for want of trying.
Crack enough at the right times.
Indeed, one already has.
Now, you want to see a good performance by Kyrsten Sinema? Here's a performance she gave back in 2010, much more convincing.
So what does that mean? Well, in the Senate, we no longer have 60 votes. Some would argue that we never had 60 because one of those was Joseph Lieberman. But that's whatever. Yeah, and Nelson, too, but really Lieberman. So now there's, I think as the president so eloquently said on Wednesday, there's none of this pressure this false pressure to get to 60. So what that means is that the Democrats can stop kowtowing to Joe Lieberman and instead seek other avenues to move forward with health reform. And so it's likely that the Senate will move forward with a process called reconciliation, which takes only 51 votes. And by the way, it's not unusual. You may recall that before the Democrats took the Senate in 2008, that the Republicans controlled the Senate for quite some time. In fact, since around 1994, they never had 60 votes, and they managed to do a lot of really bad things during that time. So the reconciliation process is still quite available, and we will use it for good rather than for evil.
That's another way of saying that filibuster reform in the context of the budget, which incidentally, like, that seems to be a pretty big function of government, isn't it? Like, how are we going to spend our money? That's the time that we don't have the filibuster. I mean, give me a break. The, you know, I don't know. I think her performance on the Senate floor really tells it all. Like, who's watching that going, this is good? I mean,
Mitch McConnell. Just real
really
happy.
Nailed it. Really nailed it. I believe it.
I thought it was A+. I mean, I would hire you for my school play called "A Semblance of Government." It's not a real government; it's a semblance of government. I'm sorry.
It's going to be fascinating, and really, sort of like no consolation, but it's going to be fascinating to see what happens with her career, like where she is for 4 or 5 years from now, because she seems to have completely mucked this up, even for herself. Like Joe Manchin, he's just going to be richer.
Why doesn't she course correct now? That's the point. If there is no incentive behind the scenes, because
she may have like she, it may be one of those things where like I've crossed the Rubicon, I can't go back, and
she
I gotta stay with the you know, like I think she's probably thinking if I vote for the filibuster reform, and even if voting rights passed, I'm still going to have the challenges I'm going to have. I think that's her problem. I think that's what she's convinced of. So
really, with this Democratic Party, I think they'd be like, oh, finally, she came to her senses. We love you, Kirsten. We have to defend. I mean, I think you're right. Like, my question is, you know, I know she met with a bunch of business leaders to stop BBB from passing, you know, and that's very clear. But at the same time, are they like, yeah, and no on voting rights, by the way. Like, are there lobbyists behind the scenes?
I bet it's that Manchin's not going to vote for the filibuster change. And so she realizes, like, I don't want to waste my vote in that situation. That's my guess. She's just blown it. She's just in the wrong place to do it, because she knows that she could take that vote and Democrats would maybe come rushing to exalt her if voting rights pass, but I think she knows that it won't pass.
Yeah.
So she's screwed.
And she's also probably representing some people behind the scenes like Mark Warner, who are less public as well. I mean, she might know that it's not just Manchin.
For voting rights, I think at this point.
Well, it's in Warner's interest, but yes. I don't know, because of Virginia.
Exactly.
So, Biden cinema 2024, eh?
If you can get Cheney off the ticket. But actually, that raises a good point, and that being this clip that we have of Kamala Harris. Is she on the reg, like going out and doing interviews? Do you know?
No, well, she's usually under lock and key because
she needs to
be like monitored 24/7 by doctors for her Havana syndrome.
Wait, is this true?
No.
Oh, okay.
But she's also just very embarrassing and not.
I'm just curious.
Not be in public.
I just want to be fair about this. Are there like 20 other interviews that happened this week that we didn't see and we were just seeing this one? Do we know? Okay. Because if this is her only national interview this week and she does this, like, seriously? Here is Craig Melvin asking VP Harris why the administration didn't prioritize citizens having greater access to at-home COVID tests. Now, we should say she's sort of got screwed by the president. President announced, I think today, they were going to give another 500 million tests free, which is an acknowledgement that they hadn't gone far enough. They haven't even given out any yet, as far as I can tell. And the insurers announced today that they can't do the reimbursements for at least another like
few weeks, right? Like we got to wait this Omicron time out because that's when people will be buying the bulk of the tests, and then we'll have to give them money back, and instead we could hoard it.
All right, so listen, guys, in the office, hold off on the tests. And if we know that we're getting reimbursed by the insurance companies in 3 weeks, maybe we won't catch COVID. But here is, here at least, the VP staff has really put her out there armed with a response to this question.
Well, we're 2 years into this. Mm-hmm. Why didn't the administration just go out and secure more at-home tests? After the Delta surge in the fall, why are we at a point now where folks still can't get tests?
But we just ordered, I don't have the number in front of me, but millions of tests. We have 20,000 sites where people can go, and I urge people to, you can Google it or go onto any search engine and find out where free testing and the free testing site is available.
But Madam Vice President, the fact that we're still telling people to Google where you can get a test and...
Well, but come on now. I mean, really, if you want to figure out how to get across town to some restaurant you heard is great, you usually do Google to figure out where it is. So that's simply about giving people, right, a mechanism by which they can locate something that they need, something that can help them.
No.
Excuse me, she's speaking.
Yeah, hang on.
The worst part of this is not even the Google thing. Like, because first off, it's not her responsibility to make sure that maybe the federal government or, you know, at the very least coordinate state sites as to where you get this information. I have Googled where you find tests, and it does shit all. But aside from that, this is like another frickin' ice cream moment. Are you kidding me? Does she have any clue as to how many people cannot Google to find a restaurant on the other side of town?
To just drive around? Like,
are you effing kidding me?
Just use your iPhone 17... and download the app and then take a QR code. You know how many people don't know how to do that kind of stuff?
But it's not even a matter of doing it. Like, there's a lot of people out there who are not going on Google to find the best restaurant in town because they can't afford to eat out. Mm-hmm. They can't afford to take the car across town. I mean, who does she think she's talking to?
Here's some numbers on
nuts.
27.6 million U.S. households don't have home internet. Over a quarter million households use dial-up internet at home. Utah, Colorado, and Colorado are the most connected. Mississippi, Arkansas, and Alabama are the least connected.
And the populations that are most unable to access or use these tools effectively. Like, I was just at a testing center, and this old couple was trying to get tested, and they were like, my phone does not work with the QR
code.
That's
what I'm saying.
We're trying for 20 minutes.
Right. Yes.
And so, like, all of this is going to... It's almost deliberately designed to not work best for the populations that are most at risk.
It's so nuts. It's so nuts that was her. That was her example. And, Craig Melvin had a point. You know, you could have said, like, okay, we're in a year into your administration. Now we're sending out tests. Now you're sending out tests? Now you're sending out tests. Well, we were afraid that if we sent out tests last June and the pandemic went away, then we would have wasted all these tests. Really?
Well, they're focused on waste as opposed to just actually creating a
safety net. Welcome to our new era of austerity. Yeah. We're on the brink of it. It's not good.
And it's odd because focusing on waste when it comes to preparation for a pandemic is exactly what got us into the situation.
Exactly.
Because the Trump administration cut our pandemic preparedness. And
exactly.
Now the Biden administration's like, yeah, but we're kind of more ideologically aligned with that.
Hedging is just unbelievable. All right. Yeah. We're going to read some IMs, then we'll get out of here. Can you hang with us, Francesca?
Yeah.
We've already dragged you through this whole half of the show anyway, so it's too late. Green New Deal now. Some guy named Jackson Hinkle challenged you to a debate. He's a communist who hosts The Dive.
He's a communist.
Communist.
Please.
I'm happy to go on, and I mean,
I think it's quite clear that I'm not a communist, but I'm happy to go on.
He's also not a communist. Please don't call him a communist. He's a charlatan.
Okay. Well, I'm happy to go on to the dive.
Wait, the dive?
He can send an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com, or he can tweet at me.
Who is this? I didn't hear what you said.
Hinkle. The guy named Jackson Hinkle.
Oh.
He's a force to vote.
Is this a real name? Oh, is
yeah.
it real?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I'm happy to go on. Oh, I'll go on. Sure.
This is what I say. He says yes to everything, but sometimes just like if they're really, I don't know who this is, but I mean, maybe.
I just learned who he was the other day and then was like, don't want to know. Just kind of at the heels.
It may take a couple of weeks, but I'll do it. Like, I mean, I try and go on as many shows as people ask me.
Yeah.
There's a funny thing where Greg from Oklahoma show.
He said this thing on Twitter, Jackson Hinkle, lies my parents told me when I was little. Santa is real. The tooth fairy leaves money under your pillow. The United States military is fire war to defend our country.
And then his parents answered, I saw that.
Yes. And then his dad replied. And then he had his dad delete the tweet.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Can you read the tweet again?
I did see that.
The dad responded saying, I'm Santa, you never complained. I can't see the whole thing because this person didn't cut off a little bit of the
Matt
side.
Just texted to me.
Yeah, I'm Santa. And,
but this was like, that was like a month or two ago.
Yeah, that was Hinkle?
I remember that. That's him. That's awesome.
But I guess he's a communist now.
Well, I'll also go on his dad's show.
Yeah, sounds like a better show.
I'll go on both shows.
Let's have his dad on.
All right. Well, I'll go, but I will go on it. Tell him Green New Deal now that I'm happy to go on. You can just IM me or send me an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. And, you know, I can't promise it's going to happen in the next couple of weeks, but certainly over the next month or two, it's just every other thing in February is going to be tricky with the kids with vacation and my ex, but we'll do it. Michael Tracy's delightful girlfriend. So does anyone know the political logic behind Biden's pivot to voting rights was? The political benefit is there to distracting from BBB. I think they just went on trying to get some win. Jason Hinkle is the guy behind the AOC own the bar nonsense.
Oh, yeah.
What is that?
Remember when it was like AOC owned a bar? There was like some story that she owned a bar, but...
Just like a Florida thing?
It was some bullshit. No, it was a while ago. It was a year or so ago, maybe.
No and awareness.
He alleged that actually she didn't work at the bar. She owned it, and he was wrong.
Oh, I thought that came from Jimmy Dore or from Wright.
No, that's where Dore got it from.
Oh, okay. No.
Okay, BNG. I'll still go on. I'm happy to do it. The state of testing, if I don't have to travel, if I could do it, Zoom. The state of testing, although I would travel, maybe. The state of testing where I live is pretty dismal.
Depends on where. What kind of restaurant?
Exactly. I'm a National Guard member and was recently activated to augment hospitals in our state. I've got assigned to a testing site in a major city near me, and we've been testing around 400 people a day since we started. The thing that sucks about my assignment is that it's at a pay site, meaning patients need doctor's order to be tested or it comes out of pocket. We're not allowed to handle payment, but it's still pretty heartbreaking that I have to tell people in uniform that they have to pay to be tested on our site or have a doctor's order or have had to turn people away. Our healthcare system is a dystopian nightmare. It really is. Just this is just absurd. I think, to be honest, though, with you, I do think that there is a concerted effort by this administration that is not too dissimilar from what we saw from the Trump administration. At this point, they're like, we can ride it out.
Yeah.
We can ride it out. Swole Cedar. Don't you see my gains? I don't get it. Sam's sensual stubble. Sam's beard looking thicker than a bowl of oatmeal. Abolish the court. Okay. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I don't know. It's thick with two C's?
It sounds clumpy. Disgusting. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like clumpy and consistent.
I did trim it.
Oh, right. Nice. Well, I it looks nice.
Thank you. Mm. Thank you. Crab saltine character.
Hurts me.
Remember how conservatives lost their minds over the media and the Covington kids? How is Tucker not doing all of that and much worse by constantly shining the spotlight of outrage on these random people? Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, they don't actually care about the content of these things. It's a cudgel.
Justin, there can be no meaningful change in the system unless capitalism is dismantled. Capitalism is the rot. It is the cause. It is the corruption. For folks out there that want to get rid of capitalism, please look at the subreddit r/antiwork.
We are anti-capitalism, among other things.
I've heard about that subreddit.
Yeah, I didn't hear about it before, and somebody asked me about it, and I kind of just took the name at face value, and I kind of like the idea of, you know, working, you know, for yourself, not for capitalists. But I've heard good things about that Reddit. So yeah, check it out.
I will check that out too. r/anti-work. Juicy. Went back to work for the first time since the pandemic started a week ago. I am now in quarantine after being exposed by an anti-mask employee. My reluctance to re-enter the workforce has been justified, to say the least. Left his best. Said employee tested positive.
I'm sorry.
Well, you know, you could have gotten that outside of work, so you really, in some ways, didn't get it at work.
Yeah, don't be fear-mongered.
It's not a work hazard.
If you can get it outside of work, you didn't necessarily get it at work. You just happened to run into another person who was working there.
So leave your boss alone, please.
Don't use the word employee when you mean just another human.
Yeah, how dare you?
I'm a human who happened to be at work with you.
So your fellow employee was anti-mask, so not wearing a mask and not required to wear a mask, I'm assuming?
Well, the problem with that, too, with an anti-masker is, you know, they are ideologically opposed to being careful about COVID.
Right.
That's the thing, like, that's the thing that really is a huge tell. That's the thing that I like about masks.
Yeah.
If I see someone who has a mask at the ready, they're signaling to me, consciously or unconsciously, that they take it seriously. And so I know, I don't know, but I assume, and I feel safe in assuming, that they are actively trying to avoid getting COVID. As opposed to people who are just like...
on the subway.
Bring it!
Yeah. I mean, there's a group... if you're in a subway car and there's, what, like 20 people in there and there's two people just sitting there looking at you, like, they're proud that they're not wearing a mask. That's one of the most off-putting things to me, too, because that signals exactly what you're saying. They don't. They probably got COVID. They don't really care, and they see it as some. It's usually men, like some sort of masculine way to show off your manliness by, if you get COVID. I don't understand it. Tucker Carlson would say the same stuff, and at the same time, he'd say, you know, COVID feminizes you. So
yeah,
it doesn't make much sense.
I'm surprised at how many like nose cockers there still are. Right, like after all this time, we still don't know how to wear a mask properly. Like we went to a grocery store the other day, first time in a long time, and a lot of nose cocking. And this is in LA. Like people know there's generally a mask compliance here, so put that over your nose, guys. Put it all the way on.
Brandon from Wisconsin, go check out Rogan's subreddit. They're clowning him in a way reminiscent of Dave Rubin. Oh, that's pretty good. Bob, did we just witness the backfire effect in practice?
In which context?
I don't know which that was at 1:55, so maybe that was the rapping thing. BQ President. I don't know what that is. I can't get that out. I'll check that out. Some link, but I can't tell what it is. From the post, Kelly and accuser exchange messages. I don't know what that is. Let's see here. Let's do five more. Ground report. Sam, Emma, with all due respect, your show has become a voice of progressive who are privileged and doesn't represent diversity. Why do Binder and Brandon only come on once a week and only for the fun half, when Brandon especially is one of our most clear-cut, in-depth, and sharp voices I've heard in a long time in progressive media? I like Brandon. I mean, he has his own show. I don't know what
and
to tell
he
you.
He has a job, too.
And he has a day job. So I don't know what else to tell you. You have many, many options that involved not watching this show. Roy Gatto, you boomers are still watching late-night talk shows. Have you heard of the internet? I haven't watched a late-night talk show in ages.
Well, we watch them on the internet, obviously, we watch them.
Sometimes I watch What Happens Live if any of the Real Housewives of New York are on, but that's kind of the
All right, two more. Dalton from Pennsylvania. I can't be the only one who gets incredibly frustrated with the argument of less than 1% of people who get COVID die from it. Like, yeah, it's still a non-zero amount of people who are dying from a pandemic we could have prevented. Yeah, it's absurd. particularly when it's this.
Like, yeah, like you rent,
like you're not going to count the raw amount of people who are dying.
Right. Mm-hmm. You don't do anything to control the denominator in how many you put that percentage towards.
Right. Exactly. That's the issue. And the final I am of the week, congressional baseball fan. What position did Joe Rogan play in the Boston Comedians Softball League? The league stats book could be served as the Rosetta Stone for our time for understanding the past, present, future, and surely it exists. In fact, no, it does not. It was not a league. It was just pickup games in Alston.
But he was bad?
At least his form for throwing.
His form for throwing, not impressive. And the distance in which those balls went, also not terribly impressive. Hmm. Let me just put it that way.
What was the position?
I seem to remember him in right field, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And that was not probably a coincidence.
Ah.
I seem to remember, yes, from third or short, looking back and going, boy, oh boy.
Wait, did you say you're on second base?
Huh?
Did you say you play on second base?
I would have probably been on short.
Short. Oh. Well, that's a flex.
Hit me a little bit.
A little bit.
Yeah, but I'm a little bit. But now I'm at third until my arm
that's
hangs
still
up.
Good.
Third is good. Ugh. Love a third baseman. Oh my God! When I was in New York, big Mets fan. David Wright, is he bad? Is he still around?
He's not on the team anymore. But he's wonderful.
His thighs are still thunderous. Okay.
All right. I was thinking of his leadership skills today.
Oh yeah, and leadership skills. But like you know, thighs. Anyway,
Matt,
it's a great way to end the show.
What up for if you? Nah, never mind. I'll say something.
Matt. Bradley,
Matt,
Emma, Francesca, great job. Folks, we are off on Monday. We have we're doing our audio collection and our repeat of our interview with Gerald Horn that we did last year on Martin Luther King's birthday. Have a great day. We will be back live on Tuesday.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and